Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Tyler, that was quite the adrenaline rush of a close to a show. My only description I had time for in my written report was JFC exclamation mark. Wow. Lance Archer, the new IWGP US champion, beating Jon Moxley, who got stuck to barbed wire after being slammed off the ring apron, threw a couple tables and curled up barbed wire. That was not the most amazing spot of the match. One of the most, and I don't want to glorify it because it seems to me like possible paralysis. When Archer dropped, slammed Moxley onto the back of those two chairs that were set up and back to back, and they just didn't give. You know, I mean, it just feels like the spinal cord could break or something. I think mine would, but Moxley seemed fine. They cut to crowd shots. I'm not alone. They went up to a close up of a fan who was like, "Oh my God, this is part of AEW's brand," and this crowd, John Cena would not have had to do any heavy lifting to get this crowd warmed up. Oh my God. This is what wrestling, a pro wrestling experience is meant to be like if you're in the building. And that energy level made, you know, clunky spots here and there irrelevant. You know, I mean, you don't want to just accept them and not try to get better, and you want to have a roster that minimizes them. But like, when you have a crowd this into everything practically, you can like not be super smooth and perfect. So yeah, Archer, the new champ. I mean, that's the headline coming out of the show. Your thoughts? Well, actually, Nick Gage might be for some people, but your thoughts on the main event?
Yeah. First of all, I'm surprised by your reaction. I know it seems to be whenever I'm on the show, there's some sort of death match in the show, because I think I was at the, on the post show with Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa after their epic battle. So I'm just like kind of surprised by your reaction, but you know, I think that's good. I think the live crowd really helps, like you said, gloss over some things that may not be the most ideal way to present your product week in and week out. I think you stated that well. And, you know, this worked for me. I'm anyone that's ever listened to me knows I'm a fan of this type of wrestling more than others. Mm-hmm. And that spot that you described, yes, was, you know, that's I'm shouting out expletives in my house as I'm typing my report here, because yeah, it is just like something that, especially, you know, if you have not watched crazy wrestling all the time, and that's the spot that gets set up a lot, but doesn't actually follow through because yeah, it's too crazy to actually do. So yeah, that was there. I kind of lost your initial question because I was taken back by your opinion of it, which I'm happy with. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was adrenaline rush. And, I think this is a good sample for next week. I don't know how much Chris Jericho is going to let Nick Gage do, but that type of wrestling, I doubt there's going to be light tubes or anything like that, but it might be a lot for 2 weeks back-to-back, so I'm kind of curious to see how they treat that and where that'll be and how that'll be booked. But yeah, this is AEW's brand and the live crowd. Yeah, I mean, much harder for this start to finish than it was earlier in the week in the same city. Not the same fans, I'm going to guess, but yeah, it was
I know.
It was a stark difference, and I think that is something that Tony Khan's going to be very happy about and try and be a little tip in his cap there. So.
And let me be clear. This is not my favorite match. Not my favorite kind of match, but I can watch. I don't know a lot about much of anything about, like, European soccer, football. But if crowd's going completely apeshit crazy, I mean, you can pull me in, you know, if everybody's just – so, yeah, I mean, some of the violence, it's like, you know, the jabbing with the fork. It's just like, I mean, it's not – I've seen some wild death matches in person, going back to Bruiser Brody and Crusher Blackwell and Mad Dog Vachon, and I loved it. So it's not like I'm, like, a snob about it. It's just – that's not, like, my favorite thing. And I think there's been some garbage wrestling that I've seen, you know, some ultra-violent matches. It just felt like garbage wrestling. It felt excessive, you know, tacks and – Like, I think that's kind of played out. Did we get tax in this match?
I didn't see any.
So it can be done. It can be done, people. That's my point. Like, you can do this kind of match and not go to some tired cliches. We didn't get fake beer bottles, you know, like the breakaway. Like, so this was just really well done for this style of match. And like I said, the crowd elevated it like crazy. I'm not a fan of blows to the head, you know, with whether it's foreign objects or not. I mean, I just think people need to be careful about that. And, you know, the bloodlust and adrenaline and feeding frenzy of crowd heat can drive wrestlers to do crazy things. And there's a list of ECW wrestlers who didn't make it to age 50 who were feeding into that. So, you know, I mean, that's up to Tony Khan to a degree to, you know, I'm going to try to pour a bucket on this. But, you know, let's keep in mind, you know, that wrestlers are people too. And this kind of crowd reaction is addictive and, you know, it can pull wrestlers and promoters, frankly, into booking these types of matches a lot. And so, you know, just be real careful. But the thing about this is yes, there was some no-selling of crazy big moves, you know, middle finger to whatever the paradigm shift spot was and all that. But it felt like they really made what they did count. Like it would be crazy to say they didn't get gratuitous, but it didn't seem gratuitous for gratuitous sake. We'll see what happens next week with Nick Gage. So yeah, my initial reaction, and again, I'm just pulled into any kind of, you know, crowd going nuts situation. When it works, it's not about you. It's about, is this product working? And it was just a wild ride, you know, Dynamite's a wild ride. I mean, the way they were into Britt Baker and Nyla Rose, everything, you know, I mean, Jericho at the beginning, I mean, you know, they're in a groove and I think ratings should keep going up with the core demo, you know, that just that 18 to 49, maybe up to, you know, the 25 to 54 number doesn't get talked about as much. Advertisers love that one too. And, you know, WWE's, you know, that's not their strength is more, you know, older people above age 55 and, you know, kind of legacy fans who are loyal to the brand. And then there's obviously kids, you know, they market to kids and AEW is just going, oh, there's that whole middle zone advertisers love. Let's super serve them. And I feel like they're doing that.
Yeah. I would agree. I mean, that's, you know, it's a zone that I'm in personally. And, yep. You know, I don't let my, I don't know, bias is the right word, but, you know, I definitely prefer watching this every week than I do, you know, I mean, Raw was okay a couple nights ago. It was better than it has been, but, you know, it still feels a little bit more like a slog. The third hour does that. So it's not to be a versus thing. But, yeah, I mean, I think all your points are valid there.
Well, I wrote in my report at pwtorch.com and my final thoughts on the show right before logging on to do this. It's such a contrast to what WWE is doing. Even if WWE was doing what they tried to do immaculately, which they're not, this is just a whole different breed of pro wrestling. I mean, the segment with Pac and Andrade and stuff like that never make WWE TV. You know, there's just too much Spanish, but it didn't matter. They could have bounced between German and Russian, and the way the crowd is into it and the authenticity of it and the cool characters and the fact that they seemed like genuinely expressing real feelings, not reciting memorized lines, it pulls me in, you know? So, yeah, I mean, so it was a lot of fun. Well, let's introduce ourselves and not talk too long before we get to phone calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. For Wednesday, July 21st, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program. I'm the founder, editor, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, the most frequent guest in Steve Austin podcasting history, and also a host of many free and VIP exclusive shows throughout the week, including yesterday's Tuesday flagship, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's a separate feed from our post shows. Both pop up when you search Wade Keller on your podcast app. When you search Wade Keller, subscribe to the Blue Show, and you can hear Jason Paul from ProWrestling.net join me for a discussion on a wide range of topics, a lot on a big weekend for WWE in particular, and that just crazy Karrion Kross situation, and much more. We went well over 2 hours, I think, like 2.5 hours. So that's available for you if you haven't hit download on that yet. But tonight we're here to talk exclusively about AEW Dynamite with my co-host tonight, Tyler Sage from the Podcast of Honor podcast. I was going to say VIP exclusive, but we have moved you to the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup coming out of the pandemic here. And you and Ryan Sullivan do a great job with not only covering ROH news and events and TV shows, but also tons of exclusive interviews over the past year and a half. Tyler, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Hey, thanks. Happy to be here. And yeah, thanks for the plug. Yeah, we're on Daily Cast now, so every Thursday our show drops. So very excited about that. Thank you for the opportunity there, Wade. And yeah, it's been great. So yeah, let's talk some AEW.
Can you say what is the most populated city in the United States, Tyler?
It's in New York City.
Yes. Not North, like Tony Schiavone struggled to say. That was a fun moment. I bring that up in part because yeah. I thought the announcers seemed to be having fun tonight. And I felt that last week too. I think kind of like Kenny Omega shines as a heel playing off of a live audience more than playing to a bunch of empty seats or scattered fans in, you know, an outdoor venue when there's like that real feedback. He seems to thrive and whatever. It could be other things too going on that are, you know, just adjusting his character. I think Ross Giovanni Excalibur, despite the travel, which could make Ross especially grumpy, it feels like they're having more fun. Maybe it's a result of Ross just sort of kicking it up a gear after slipping up with the WWE Dynamite thing or a variety of factors. But I don't know if I hear things. I don't know how well they get along, you know, after the shows always, but or even during the shows as we hear sometimes. But it's more fun when they all seem to be having fun. And I thought, it wasn't excessive. They didn't make it all about them, but there was a looseness and a chemistry between them tonight with some fun moments, especially giving Shivani a hard time at different times. And I thought the flow is good. I think their chemistry has improved. And your quick thoughts on that, Tyler?
Yeah, I agree. I think just like, you know, when you think about people that you work with, your coworkers, how easily can you kind of save them? And Excalibur a couple times here was finishing sentences that Ross and Tony couldn't finish, and it didn't feel like there was malice behind it. It felt like he was really helping them out, and they thanked him. So, you know, those little things go a long way to show you that they're on better footing than they were maybe, you know, 6 months ago, 3 months ago, something like that. So, yeah, I agree.
Yep. All right, so we have our phone lines open right now. We're live about 20 minutes after Dynamite ended, and we invite you to join us. So if you haven't called in yet but you're listening to our live stream, give us a call. We'd love to hear from first-time callers or people coming back now that crowds are back, which certainly, you know, understandably is the case for a lot of you, and, of course, our regulars also. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you would like to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. If you've downloaded our show late Wednesday night or sometime on Thursday and you want to know how to listen live, it's commercial free and available to stream live after Dynamite goes off the air. Roughly 5 minutes after it goes off the air, we go live. You can find a link to that at pwtorch.com in my report on Dynamite. Same thing applies this Friday after SmackDown and next Monday after Raw. You can also follow us on Twitter at pwtorch. And near the end of the show, I put up a tweet there with a direct link to the live stream also. And if that all fails, you can just go to wadekellerpostshow.com. That's the homepage, and navigate to the live stream. So multiple ways to find us, and we invite you to join us for the live portion. We are hoping to hear from one or two of our on-site correspondents. One of them said there might be a conflict after the show where he won't be able to. So we'll see how it goes. I did hear from one of them that the Nick Gage announcement was he said about half the people knew him and half didn't, you know, which sounds about right, just in terms of an AEW crowd. You know, I think people can watch AEW and not have watched, you know, Nick Gage documentaries or understand what his story is. But about half the crowd knew. I venture to guess it'd be a lot less if John Cena had dropped his name on Raw on Monday. But it was super intense. So we'll get into that. I want to hear what you guys think of that also. I think that is the end of the plugs for now. So let's go ahead and begin to bring some other people into the conversation. We will start with we'll go with Nick and Brattleboro first. Nick, you're so patient, always waiting for us. So I'm going to bring you on early here and get your thoughts on things. Go ahead, Nick. What'd you think of Dynamite?
Oh, Well, thank you for getting me on. Hi, Tyler. How you doing? I want to thank you for all your ROH information. It's really helping me on my hits and misses. Anyway. Oh.
Thank you.
I want to know who still makes metal garbage cans. The only use they have is in wrestling matches.
Yeah, there's something to that.
You know, I see a metal garbage can and go, oh, that thing's getting bent. I think this show is great. I thought, the last match could turn some people off. It's not my super style, but I can take it now and then, especially with someone like Moxley, who you know that's his thing. And I'll really compliment AEW, because when they did the split screen, I refuse to call it picture in picture, it was during that was mostly the time Moxley was setting up the tables, he was throwing chairs into the ring, it was kind of like they used that moment to do all the stuff to get stuff set up, and then they got right back right before he jumped and he squished his ankle in the chair. So it's like, you know, it was perfect. That's what you should use a commercial break for. The crowd's still into it, but you as the viewer aren't really missing anything super, super serious. I thought the whole show was just, they took you up and down. I thought it was great.
They are getting better at what they do. I mean, that's just like, you know, a year and a half ago, they weren't as good as they are now at doing a live TV show with all the little things that WWE has mastered and polished to a point of it seeming sterile, you know, and too formulaic. That is not an AEW problem. They made this, you know, they make a lot of things work that were clunky, you know, that we would have been pointing out a year and a half ago, Tyler. There's more... you know, there's more elbow grease put into some of the between match segments. There's more pizzazz in terms of the presentation of the product, but they haven't sacrificed the other stuff. You know, the promos and the matches and the angles.
Yeah, I agree. And just on the next point on using the commercial break. I mean, it's formulaic in a good way that AEW typically does the kind of slow. For example, another example tonight, the Blade did most of his offense. During a break, and then as soon as they came back from break, Orange Cassidy got his comeback and the crowd popped, and it just makes the show feel a lot more lively, and just those little things work really well. And having set the promo packages right before the break to get you excited for the following week, and just setting up matches week in and week out effectively is just it's good stuff by them.
Nick, back to you.
I also am really happy they got Chavo to be with Andrade now. And whether they originally thought, okay, Vicky's the one and this is going to be great, or they changed, you know, they jumped off one horse and jumped onto another midstream, it works because he's a Guerrero. I mean, it brings in someone much better for Andrade without it seeming like, oh, we made a big mistake with Vicky, we gotta make a big change. And I agree with you completely. That whole segment, the Spanish, I'm not a Spanish speaker, it didn't bother me. I thought it was kind of cool that because they're in Texas, probably a quarter to a half of that audience speaks Spanish, or at least some Spanish, so that they got a reaction to the pure Spanish from part of the audience. So you were like, okay, I don't know what he said, but it must have been something cool. And because, yep. And then they had the guy, and then they had Penta's guy translate, and Andrade got most of what he needed to say out in his style, and he actually kind of seemed to own it. That he, okay, yep. I'm not the best English speaker, but doesn't matter because I'm Andrade El Idolo. You know, I mean, I thought that was great. And Chavo in a nice suit. I thought it was a perfect transitioning Andrade up the ladder a little bit.
Is how would you explain, Tyler, the face heel dynamic in that segment? Where is it a pick'em? Is it, or are we being steered in a real direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think Andrade is pretty solidly the heel. Now Chavo did give me big heel manager vibes when he went
right.
in there and was like, "Wow, you remember me? This is great." You know,
yeah.
I don't think that was the best.
AEW's great. All the talent,
yeah, yeah.
It's unbelievable. You guys are
yeah.
great. Yeah, so
yeah.
like that weird way to get heel heat.
Yeah.
That was my point. Like,
yeah.
you know, bailing out of the ring at the end, clearly Andrade's a heel. The way he's cocky, you should be listening to me. And they're like, you know, we're not, you know, Pac saying they don't work for me. We're a family. I mean, it's such a – what I loved about that, except for Chavo, was the clear heel-face dynamic. Like, I don't want Pac to be a tweener. I don't want Penta and Rey Fénix to be like, well, it's circumstantial depending on who they're facing. I like, give me clear-cut reasons. Because that's what's fun. It's. I mean, yes, cheering wildly for spots and big moments. Of course, that's a great part of pro wrestling. But I want to like some people and dislike some people, just like when I watch sports. And this gave that to me. I asked you because the Chavo thing did throw it off a little. And I
yeah.
want – Chavo can be a really effective, annoying, cloying, annoying, whiny heel. He's not the coolest guy, and Andrade's like the coolest guy. So I'm not 100% sold on Chavo yet either, other than relative to Vicky. It's an upgrade. I want to see how he kind of matures into this and isn't just sort of the kind of plain speaking, you know, whatever he was before. Like, I want to know what edge he has. I get they're trying to make Andrade, you know, build on the Guerrero history. And there's so much of what Tony Khan, you know, lived through in the Monday Night War era and beyond. And he really wants to kind of recreate special moments like that. I get it. I think it's smart to a degree. But I want to see Chavo grow into this spot as opposed to, oh, my God, you remember me, and I'm so happy to be here, and you guys are great, which is kind of the vibe I got.
Yeah, I agree, and I have similar reservations on Chavo in general, but we'll see. You know, I don't know if it's not working. Maybe they can do where Andrade, you know, treats him unwell, and then I don't know what you do with him after that. But, yeah, I think it'll be a week by week. I knew this is definitely a course correction that needed to happen, so – I think he'll get the benefit of the doubt for at least a couple weeks because he's not Vicky. So, you know, I think AEW has shown the ability to pivot and either use characters or repackage them in a way that uses them to the best capacity. So we'll see where it goes. But, you know, I give them the benefit of the doubt at this point with the characters that they introduced.
Well, Tyler, would you rather
yeah.
had Chavo come out and be like, thank you, everybody, for remembering me. I bet you think I'm grateful, but I'm not. I don't care about any. You know, like, it pivots just immediately from that star reaction, hey, he's back, to don't even think for a second that I care what you think about me. Like, just go a heel on him. I mean, the fans would love it. They'd laugh,
mm-hmm.
they'd smile, and then they'd boo for fun. Like, I would have done that. Like, that's the only thing about the segment that, you know, I don't know. I mean, we can see where they go
mm-hmm.
with it, but I don't think there's a lot that Chavo did to help the dynamic other than he can be the English-speaking version of what Andrade just said.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, if I were giving him bullet points, not scripting him, I would tell him to, you know, be like, oh, this is a big, you never cheered for me like this before, so thanks for finally doing it, and then, like, turn on him that way that he never got the respect he deserved, and Andrade gives him respect, and go that whole angle and turn into a heel instantly, I think would have been a much better course because, you know, it's been so long since he's been a major character on, you know, wrestling television that you could basically establish him instantly as that kind of character and it would work and we'd have memories of him, but this new character would be established pretty quickly. And I think, you know, they'll probably have to do that next week or the week after and then it'll feel a little
yeah.
foreign and then we'll finally accept it 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
4 weeks from now. But yeah, it's kind of an odd start.
Nick, anything else for us?
Yeah, just I think it's a great battle for Andrade to be in because he can have if you do two matches each, you've got six matches against great opponents for him.
Yeah,
all four, you know, who can move and flow and just, you know, they all seem to lay it in pretty hard, and it just, I'm just excited about seeing that whole dynamic work out and seeing the fights. I mean, It's just going to be fun to watch, and I think as long as AEW keeps promoting fights ahead of time so that you know what you might be getting, I'll appreciate that, unlike all the surprises you get on WWE that it's like, huh, what, who, what? I wasn't expecting that, you know.
Yeah.
But
and they're
I'm
not,
excited.
Nick,
I'm
they're not putting them – they're not putting them out there in the ring to have good matches. They know they can have good matches, and they will have good matches, and that's awesome, but they're giving them this storyline, this backstory that feels real, and it feels relatable. So now there's more to it than just look at those cool moves, because that's not enough. Like, it's, I want it to be part of every, you know, just about every, you know, feud. Like, yeah, good, more than competent wrestlers, excellent athletes doing great work. But don't say, well, the smaller guys who do great wrestling, we'll just put out there to kind of give fans like that a dose, but then we'll give these other people the real good promos. Like, no, you can actually combine those two things. And it seems like that is what they're doing here. They're building on Andrade's cool factor and presence and finding a way to support him and make the fact that he's not speaking English cool. And part of his gimmick, or not that he's not speaking any, but that it's not his strength, that doesn't seem like something that he now has to feel insecure about. And in WWE, it sucked out the bravado that he had because he felt self-conscious because of the position he was put in, and that is not the case now.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you, and that's all I got. It was a great show. Thoroughly had a great 2 hours.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
Yep, take care. All right, we'll go next to Craig in Toledo. Craig, good to talk to you again. What do you think of Dynamite? I think it's Craig in Toledo. All right, we'll check back. Let's go to Hinton in London, Ontario up next. Go ahead, Hinton. What do you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade, I was calling with caller ID this time, so I didn't know if you had the number on, but thankfully you did. I finally got it to work on Skype, but wasn't able to figure it out. So just a contrapoint to the main event. This is exactly the sort of match that made me stay away from a lot of other promotions. And let me just say, I don't mind violent matches. Randy Orton versus Mick Foley, Triple H versus Mick Foley, Mick Foley versus Edge, those are all still matches I go back and I enjoy from time to time. But this match, and I think I said it last week as well, didn't have a story. And this is one of AEW's flaws that continues. It's something they haven't corrected. Is they'll give you a match like Baker versus Rosa with a very poorly told story for that one, and in this one. Almost zero story for a title that belongs to another promotion. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, be contrarian or needlessly trash AEW, because Dynamite's the only show I watch, and or at least week to week. But just imagine what this match could have been had there been some good Mick Foley-level storytelling for weeks on end within AEW canon. Like, the only story was, hey, remember the death match they had, another promotion that didn't air on any of the same television networks that the current fan base is used to, right? So, frankly, when it began, I went for a bathroom break. Then I came back. I did get into the match like I would a generic spot fest. But then I thought, do I really want to see any of them get their asses kicked right now? Do I feel for Lance Archer or Jon Moxley the way I felt for Triple H, and that I want to see this asshole just get his ass kicked, just drive him into thumbtacks, or, you know, rooting on Mick Foley. You know, I don't want him to retire, etc. I wasn't feeling that. I'm like, okay, match is over. He lost a title that I don't really care about. I should probably let someone more acquainted with New Japan explain. Yeah.
Well, that's your point of view is valuable. You don't have to defer to somebody who has watched a bunch of New Japan to have the feelings you had. They, trust me, AEW and TNT do not only want people who know and are familiar with and love New Japan to watch Dynamite. So your point of view is absolutely essential to their growth. So I've got something to say to that, but Tyler, I want to get your take first.
Yeah, and I think you know, all your points are valid too. I would just say that, you know, the matches you were referring to are, you know, big pay-per-view matches that were kind of the keystone of the company at that time. And this was a match that, you know, main event TV, but it was for a belt that, you know, it's not part of this company. If John Moxley was AEW world champion, I think this match would have had that build up if he was going to drop it. So I just think it's you know, what the match needed to be. And AEW style right now is to put on like a lot of top tier matchups that don't have a great story week by week. I mean, for example, Malakai Black and Cody Rhodes is going to be on TV in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever it is. And I thought that was going to be at All Out, you know, probably still will be, but I think it just depends on, you know, what you're looking for. And I don't think this match was ever booked to be a great story that people are going to remember for a long time. It's more of a, you know, people talking about the match after the show, being like, wow, that was a crazy match for TV, and then we'll kind of fade off into memory. It was kind of the plan. That's just kind of my vibe on it, is that this is just a way to keep a hot product week in and week out by having matches that are exciting, but maybe don't have the greatest story going into it because they don't have time to build that many matches over and over again. But, Wade, what was your take?
Yeah, I think that this was a TV main event. This wasn't a major pay-per-view match. And what I like about Dynamite, in contrast to WWE, is not everybody who faces everybody is wrestling each other because there's a personal feud that's long-running and has multiple matches. I like the variety of reasons that we see matches in AEW. And it's like in WWE, there's like, I don't know, I'd have to sit down and like think this through a little more, but it feels like probably 80% of them happen because they're involved in a major feud that will culminate at a pay-per-view. And 15% is some other a title match, but not a feud of some kind. And 5% is like, you know, just to humiliate somebody. and with AEW, it's like, there's like, you know, probably 6 or 7 main reasons matches take place. They're pretty evenly divided. Some of them are intense feuds. Sometimes it's just a contendership match or a showcase match, or it's there to let somebody shine a little bit against somebody who also gets in, you know, some spots, sometimes too many. But in the end, it's there to kind of feature the star, and it's a backdrop and a buffer between other matches. Like, my point is, there's lots of reasons matches happen. And one of the things about the AEW brand that I like that is an adjustment, and I'm a voice often on the other side saying, AEW, be careful that you don't make people feel excluded from this special club that a lot of hardcore fans take great pride in, who were the first to wear Bullet Club t-shirts before every dork was wearing them. You know, whatever their attitude is about that. They're always on the cutting edge. They're the bellwether fans, the influencers, the cool kids at the, you know, the cool lunch table. AEW sometimes caters to them in a way that I think does make others feel excluded. So I have to be careful about that. And I bring that up because I think it's a legit hindrance to their growth at times, or, you know, I think it has been and it could continue to be. However, sometimes you don't need to know everything to know this is a big deal and it's cool and there's something at stake here, because there's 5,000 to 15,000 people going absolutely batshit crazy for it. And they go balls out and they're cool characters and they're battling over a championship that you don't know a lot about, but the announcers have enough credibility with you that if they tell you it's important and there's a history to it, you're like, all right, I'll watch. And that's how I feel about, you know, a college basketball game now and then on a rainy, you know, Saturday afternoon. Like, well, I don't really know. I don't even know where this college is. And I'm not a huge college basketball fan, but if the crowd's going crazy and I hear an announcer voice I trust, I'll get into it, especially if it's like, you know, the fourth quarter and it's close. So to me, it's like, I like that AEW, but it is an adjustment because it's different, that matches happen for different reasons and not just mostly one reason. And if it's a good match and the characters have charisma and the crowd's super into it, I think you can get away with it. So that's kind of my framing of it, Hinton.
I would concede that if it wasn't a Texas death match, I just don't see any reason for this being a death match. Like, take away, fine, if you want unique competitors, two charismatic individuals competing for a foreign title, which is, you know, still a prestigious title. Like, I've seen Wrestle Kingdom shows, like, they do a good job. But I don't follow the product, you know, as closely as I need to. And I just don't get why it's a death match. But, like, for a death match, I want to be able to feel like I'm emotionally invested. I just wasn't emotionally invested in this. And Moxley is my favorite wrestler of the past probably decade or so. And I don't know. But anyway, I think I've said my piece on it. I want to move on to the another similar related point. What are your early thoughts on Wheeler Yuta? From a character standpoint, I don't know who he is. I mainly just know him from reading the Dark reports on the Torch. I don't know why he's suddenly friends with Orange Cassidy. And Jim Ross brought this question up.
Excalibur
is like, well, he's Excalibur says he's the protege of Orange, but I don't know how much training Orange gives him. I'm like, when did Orange become a trainer? And when did they meet? Uh-huh. Show me the moment when they met. And his style is so different from Orange's. Like, how does this fit? I don't know. So what are your thoughts here?
Tyler, over to you first on that one too.
I've been a fan of Wheeler for, I don't know, a few years now, and he was in, when Ring of Honor came back from the pandemic, he was in their Pure tournament and worked a couple dates with them, and they did not sign him, which I think they should have, to the Podcast of Honor tomorrow and listen to my thoughts on that. But, I think he's really good, and he's definitely shoehorned into this because Trent is hurt and going to be out for a while, and obviously they wanted to have the three male members of the best friends, and he just kind of feels shoehorned in because he's a good worker. I don't think there's a lot of good storytelling there, and it shows. And I think that's probably the low marks from a presentation standpoint on this show is just the presentation of Wheeler and that story, and then kind of that Blade Orange. All of that was kind of the lowest I had on this show. So mm-hmm. I'd agree with you that Wheeler's good. He's kind of a jobber to the stars right now, and gets a couple spots in and looks athletic, but. He's a guy kind of reminds me of like Lee Johnson or something that'll lose a bunch and then be with that group and maybe become somebody down the road. But yeah, so it's not good explanation. It just, it's almost one of the things where don't even explain it. Cause that's probably better than trying to shoehorn it in and explain it when half your announce team doesn't know what's going on. So,
I think they don't get a great grade for explaining who he is and why he's hanging out. I mean, they sort of try and come, oh, now you can see why the best friends want to hang out with them. What they best friends just want to hang out with people who are, you know, undersized, but fit and athletic. Like what, I don't get that. Like why, what is it that we know about the best friends that makes his ring style something that would make them then also friends? So yeah, I mean, this is not a strength of AEW when they decide, hey, we want to get this guy some TV time. He's good. He can give some good matches and he's a small guy, but he can make the smaller part of the AEW roster not just obviously seem small, but work their style and keep up and be competitive. And I think that's why he's there. He's trustworthy and in the ring and out of it. And, you know, whatever the reasons are that people end up getting on Dynamite. And that's there. So, yeah, I mean, but it's fine. It could be better, but sometimes, you know, it's not like they're just ignoring it at all. It's just not a very good explanation. But I think he's good enough, and the story that they tell with him is good enough that I don't see it as like a pulling down the show or anything like that. Hinton, anything else?
Yeah, I want to bring up something that I briefly mentioned last week, but I think today it applies as well regarding the Elite and the Hangman Page and Dark Order segment. I think... Well, first of all, I thought that, Omega's getting good heat, which is not something I expected. And Paige is getting, same reactions he got prior to the pandemic. So I like that. I think Paige has a little bit ways to go in terms of mic work, but I think he'll get there. My problem, I think, is there are too many Dark Order members, and they aren't exactly jobbers either. Like they're not on the level of the Social Outcasts in WWE a few years back. Like they've challenged for championships before. So the Elite, I feel, just aren't having enough moments to get enough heat or enough, or generating enough sympathy for Hangman Page with, beat downs or something like that. The Dark Order just kind of runs out like this giant army, and they're so, there's just so many of them that it just feels like, okay, there's nothing that the Elite can possibly do short of just try and isolate them backstage, which, good luck with that because they always kind of hang out together anyway. Social distancing is not a thing for them. So what are your thoughts on just this psychology? I know the crowd eats it up, but to me it's like, I would really like the Elite to kind of get a little more heat, because we know Paige is going to win in the end, but there needs to be a better story told here. But like better, I mean marginally, because it's already pretty good. But this is just like the perfectionist in me saying this.
Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't have an issue with it. I think it's, my issue would be similar, but not exactly the same, is that the run-ins, the way the segments end, have been kind of the same with the Dark Order in that same method. So I do think, the Elite trapping them in a room and having Paige on an island and getting heat on him, you know, on the lead up to maybe the multi-man tag match would be good, or something like that. You know, changing it up in general is good, but, you know, I guess I just don't view the Dark Order as a threat, even as, you know, even if they were, you know, 10-5 Dark Order to Elite members. I think the Elite are booked so strong that I would still feel good about the Elite's odds there. So I think that helps with me not being too worried about it. And, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll talk about it later or now, but I'm not so sure Paige is going to win this, but that's just my opinion. Maybe we can save it for later if we need to. But what do you think, Lee?
I'm not sure, but I feel like the crowd would like to see it. I think Omega is doing a good enough job right now with Callis that some of it's going to come down to the lay of the land. I mean, unless they just have it locked in and they absolutely know where they want to go after that and after that. But I think crowd responses are going to have something to do with. And they are on what does a politician say? A listening tour when they aren't going to declare their candidacy or there's some tax reason they can't yet or something. I can't remember the details on it. But I'm going to go on a listening tour, but I'm not running yet. AEW's on a listening tour. You know, I mean, I think they want to know what's working, what's not. You know, what options do we have with wrestlers who show up and sign? I mean, the CM Punk rumors are blowing up. Daniel Bryan rumors are blowing up. So, I mean, if CM Punk gets signed or Daniel Bryan gets signed in their baby faces, Kenny Omega should keep the title, and they should make lots and lots of money with those matches first. If Punk's going to come in as a heel and be some anti-AEW person, he'd be a great antagonist for Hangman Page, for instance. Danny Bryan should be a babyface. I'm not even going to entertain that notion. Mm-hmm. So that's my point. You know, I mean, but it's two good choices, because I think Kenny's doing a good job now. He seems to be putting some thought into his wardrobe and his hair, and it sounds weird to say that, like, well, who cares? Well, look at him for a while. He looked like he woke up from a nap and didn't care. And it's like now it looks more major league. It does. He's a more polished act. And all that stuff adds up and makes a difference. So anyway, I'm fine with Kenny keeping it. But Hangman Page, as far as the number of Dark Order members, I mean, the crowd popped for them tonight. You know, I'm on a listening tour too. You know, it's not all about what I think. I mean, I want to listen to what crowds react to. And the dynamic with Hangman and Dark Order isn't for everyone, but I'm fine with it not being a faction that you can name everybody, because I mean, John Silver's sort of the star of the group, but I mean, Colt Cabana's like a good talker and a veteran, and he's had TV exposure in a lot of companies, but he just sort of stands around, you know? I mean, it's more about the sum of the parts it's more about the whole than the individuals that make it up. So anyway, I don't know if I answered everything, but hint, any follow-up to that or closing words?
You make some good points there. I just wanted to respond to one thing regarding the Chavo Guerrero appearance. My first full year as a wrestling fan was 2004 when Chavo was a strong mid-carder, so I do have a soft spot for him. I'm not sure how I feel about him managing Andrade. I don't think he oozes enough charisma or is good enough on the mic, but just regarding the babyface heel dynamic, this is what AEW does all the time. Anytime someone makes a debut, they're always a babyface. Look at Miro, for example, right? Like, he was just total, I am all Elite, screw WWE, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So they just kind of let them go. They're like, okay, I don't care if you're managing freaking Adolf Hitler right now, you're going to be a babyface. And then next week, let's do the heel stuff, because, you know, the crowd knows this stuff's all fake anyway. So that's just another one of my pet peeves of AEW. They just kind of let people, I think, vent a little too much when that venting can be done on podcasts. But yeah, otherwise, thank you guys very much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Stay tuned for the Rampage hits and misses, which Wade was kind enough to let me handle starting August.
Yeah, we got Rampage coming up, Tyler. You know about that.
I do. Is that shameless plug time or what?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Yeah, so,
thank you, Hen, by the way.
Thank you, Wade, for giving me the opportunity to do the Rampage post-show. I think we're going to do a rotating co-host, and we'll be either VIP exclusive or added on to your SmackDown post-shows. And it'll be me and a guest host just recapping and talking about Rampage like we do here on for Dynamite or for Raw or for SmackDown. So more details to come. That's kind of the rough picture right now. So, yeah, very excited for that.
Yeah, we will have coverage of Rampage at pwtorch.com, pwtorchvip.com for our VIP members on our ad-free website, and audio coverage of it afterwards. So it is impossible for me to host the SmackDown post show and watch Rampage and do the normal reaction. And we'll see. I mean, you might be stuck with the thunder of AEW, or it could be like this really cool, tight hour that they just make, you know, this really exciting must-see program that shows up SmackDown every week. We'll see. And you get the feast or famine of that situation, Tyler. So looking forward to that. All right.
A lot. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say a lot of Nick Camarado main events. I'm very excited for it.
So. Yep. Maybe the Acclaimed will make a return.
Ooh. Yeah, that'd be good.
They've gone missing from Dynamite, that is. All right. Let's go to Alex in Montreal, Quebec. We'll travel around Canada here. Alex, good to hear from you again. What did you think of Dynamite?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. Overall, I enjoyed the show. I thought last week's was a bit bad. But I just want to take a second to kind of appreciate, I guess, AEW's booking of Lance Archer, not just recently, but like since he's come out. I mean, he's basically always been kind of like built up as this monster who gets like, you know, pretty hot, and then he is there to be taken down. So whether that's by Cody, by Miro, by I'm sure he's had at least one or two more significant ones in there. But, yeah, that's right, and by Moxley as well. So this isn't actually his first time fighting Moxley in AEW. They fought at the anniversary show in 2020, around October. And this week, I got the feeling, and I knew it was going to happen. I knew he was going to win tonight because – they have the Road 2 special this week. They were really making him come over as a baby face, as kind of like a hometown boy, as someone who's worked his whole life really hard. And Jake Roberts did some commentary on Elevation this week that, you know, also really put over Lance Archer that, you know, he's fighting for what he deserves kind of thing. And those two things, the Road 2 special and the Elevation special, just clicked in my mind, like, it's happening. They're going to change the title this Wednesday, and I'm going to be happy for him because it also happened in his hometown in Texas. And it was just, to me, beautiful booking, you know? Like, a guy who has, if he had lost this, it would just be like him getting
knocked
surprised? Down. Sorry, what's that?
Oh, sorry, your connection went out a little, so I thought you might have been done. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, okay. No, I was just saying it was just a beautiful booking tonight, I thought, with giving Archer this kind of timely win. Because had he lost this time, I think maybe it would have been, you know, a bridge too far, one too many big losses. And he needed a significant win in AEW. And I think going over Moxley, I mean, that's a feather in his cap that he can kind of have with him and hold proudly for quite a while. I think he can get a lot of juice out of that for several months at least. So, yeah, I was just so happy with the booking and having Archer finally get his first major significant victory and his first major, not really feud, but yeah, his first major real victory over a significant other character opponent in AEW. So, yeah, just how have you felt about his booking so far? And did you feel, yeah, this was the right time? They made the right call.
Yeah, Tyler, were you surprised by the title change? And then what Alex had to say about, you know, kind of a contrast to WWE, you know, I mean, even this week, you know, book the hometown guy to win and let the crowd enjoy it. Your thoughts on that and just kind of the larger story arc that Alex brings up about Archer's role in AEW and how they utilize him.
Yeah, I was probably about 60-40 that was going to, you know, Moxley was going to retain. You know, that's more so to do with who does New Japan want to hold that belt and, you know, who do they want to have on New Japan Strong? Could they get Moxley to work on that? Was that allowed? All that sort of stuff. But, yeah, so I was, you know, surprised when Archer got the win here. But I totally agree that he needed a win here. I mean, I was going through his whole history, and I can't think of one major win that Archer has had. And, you know, the most impressive thing that Archer's done is that I could think of without him losing was him just getting in Sting's face a couple times a few months ago. And every other time he's been on the losing end of the feud. So, yeah, that was good. And he, up to this point, has kind of been like every big guy in the 80s in WWF versus Hulk Hogan, just kind of to everybody else. He was just that big guy that, you know, was kind of a gatekeeper and let guys level up like Miro and Moxley and all those sort of guys. And, you know, that's a good spot to be in. And he was booked in a way that one win here can, you know, make him kind of a big-time player again, which is good. And I think, you know, at least in the past, I've been a little bit more negative than probably most people about having all these extra company belts, you know, that are AEW belts. But I think this is a good use of when you have a different company's belt and, you know, someone can lose it and it's not that big of a deal, but it can put somebody over, which is a net positive. So those are just kind of all my thoughts on Archer. But, yeah, I think he's been booked appropriately in my mind. And he's kind of being heated up here for you know, for someone to probably beat him down the line. I think this is about his apex within AEW, and I think that's totally fine.
Alex, anything else?
Yeah, sure. I thought Jericho and Sean Spears really over-delivered tonight. I thought that match could be, like, solid, decent, and it was that, and I thought a bit even better than that. The spots were pretty clever. I really liked the way they built up to the ending. With Spears going into the chair in the corner and then just taking the Judas effect. So, you know, I wasn't very excited when we first announced these kind of like five labors of Jericho. But now after that performance and knowing that he's probably going to put everything he can into making Nick Gage look like legit next week, I'm wondering if we could be in the midst of seeing kind of like a pretty special run from Jericho's character in AEW, because I thought tonight was a really strong start to this match series that he's going to have. So yeah, what did you think of that match? And do you love Sean Spears as much as I do yet, Wade? And yeah, that's kind of my question there.
Well, first of all, if I'm getting the kind of crowd reactions that Jericho's getting, I want to just wrestle every week. I mean, it's got to feel so good for Chris to be in front of this generation of fans who are reacting to him. I think he's getting the best reactions of his career right now, which is saying something. And I've watched him dating back to him and Lance Storm in those, you know, teeny bopper Rock and Roll Express style intro videos for Smoky Mountain Wrestling when he first debuted as a rookie. And so, yes, I think if they throw somebody with different styles at him each week, and Nick Gage is certainly a surprise, then that's fun because that gives him a chance to do a real wide variety of things. I can't believe MJF said, you know, it's the labors of Jericho, not Jericho going into labor, but based on his physical appearance, I can understand people being confused. Like, I can't believe the stuff MJF gets away with. That was amazing. And, yes, I when I watch Jericho's matches, you watch to go, what if I were a young wrestler, what would I be watching about the things Jericho was doing that I can learn from? Because he's 50 years old. He's not in the best shape of his career. And yet he's doing really smart things structurally and timing and milking moments. And they're just, you know, it's not about being as smooth and great of an athlete as he was 15 or 20 years ago. That's not his thing. But it is study and watch and understand, you know, he's going to bring people up a level through efficiency and cleverness and being a ring general. And I thought there were some examples of that in this match. I'm blown away by the match, but yeah, I think it was more than it probably should have been. If it weren't somebody with Jericho smarts and the brilliance of Sean Spears. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah. I agree with all that. I also think if I'm Sean Spears, I probably try and defend my character a little bit beforehand and be like, do I have to do a headshot and then a C4 and you kick out of that? I would have maybe eliminated the headshot with the chair because I just kind of devalued Sean Spears even more so. I mean, I know he's not the top guy in that group, but I thought that was a little much of a kick out there. But, I mean, obviously Jericho was going to win this, and I think the match was better than it had any right to be, to be honest. And, it was just well pulled. It wasn't, the best work match ever, but, it was just the classic thing of, there's a story going into it and, like that long-term story that works and this whole journey for Jericho. It's just working really well. And, to go meta a little bit, what he signed in, March of 2018, right, or 2019? And, I think he signed a three-year deal, so this could be some combination of him before he goes on tour with Fozzy in the fall, because I know those dates are confirmed, and maybe his contract's coming up and he wants to have a good run, and then knowing Chris Jericho, he's a mercenary and he'll go to the highest bidder. So I would not be surprised if he took the money and wanted to have a good run here on the way out and wanted to be a big surprise at WrestleMania in Dallas next year or something like that if the contracts work out. But that's just me totally speculating. But I think that's why we're seeing this intensity that he's milking this like you said, Wade, I think it's the best reaction he's ever gotten. He wants to enjoy that. So,
yeah. Alex, anything else for us?
Sure. Just before I go, this whole QT Marshall thing. So the last 2 weeks, he's had under 1 minute segments, which leads me to believe that I think Tony Khan has probably seen that, this, whatever this is with the factory, this faction, maybe are not exactly a bust, but it's not working to the degree that maybe they were hoping for. And I'm wondering this kind of apology that he's promising that he will probably get or try to get out of Tony Schiavone next week is some kind of setup for Tony Schiavone bringing in someone to take out QT to get give him some comeuppance for spilling coffee on him on national TV, or if someone's going to come to Tony Schiavone's aid and take out QT and kind of just not bury the faction, but in a way just give us a nice conclusive goodbye to this story, because I don't find QT that compelling as a television character. And given the time that he has been getting on TV lately and how short that is, I think they're probably seeing that. Maybe that's just me projecting my own desires onto what I want to happen. I guess what I'm asking, what are the chances of QT taking a Shining Wizard from Bryan Danielson at Fight for the Fallen in defense of Tony Schiavone?
Oh, I'd love for that to be like CM Punk showing up. How dare you pick on Tony Schiavone? QT Marshall, I want to see you on pay-per-view. And by the way, it's a protein shake. We have settled that dispute. It was not coffee. I'm pretty sure it was some sort of something a little thicker than coffee. Point of contention solved, I guess. Tyler, I mean, yes, it's less than a minute. QT is that a still less than 30-45 seconds too long of the factory? Do they belong on AW Dark? Is it TV time well spent? And are they doing too much with Schiavone? As fun and gregarious as, the announcers joshing around and the Britt Baker thing, are they overdoing it? And I'm saying this, not even having a strong stance myself, I'll show my hand. Or is Tony, a good asset in this way? People like him, and, he plays well off of, wrestlers, and he gets sympathy. So, it's fun, and it's harmless, and it's a small segment.
Yeah, I do think it's too much time for QT personally. It just seems like him and the factory are a dark elevation act at this point, especially after losing the feud to Cody. And I don't know who could come out that would look better for doing it. I would see someone like Darby or Orange Cassidy, that level of someone that would come out and make the save. But even then, it's just a cute little story to make them, look good for 30 seconds. So I don't even think that's worth it for anybody. Yeah, I mean, and then when it comes to Tony, I think you probably keep it to one segment a week of him being either in the ring announcing someone, bringing them in, or, being backstage and being kind of the someone that someone attacks. I think it works. They've kind of let off a little bit. He was doing it 3-4 times an episode a few weeks ago, and they've kind of let up a little bit. So I think they're in the right track with him. But I think he's a very sympathetic character in those roles and can work. And when he gets cut off, or even when he talks back a little bit to like someone like Don Callis or Kenny Omega, I think it works well. So I think what we felt tonight was a pretty perfect use of him week in and week out. You know, maybe some weeks use him a little more, some weeks a little less, to even it out across the weeks. But yeah, I think he's a valuable asset in that role.
Very good. Alex, always good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Yep, you too. All right, our number, if you want to try to jump in, 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad when you call if you want to be on the show. We'll go next to Chris in Mount Palin, Newfoundland. Chris, staying in Canada here. Good to hear from you again. What do you think of Dynamite?
Hey, gentlemen. You know, I think I liked this a good deal less than most of the callers tonight. Not that it was bad or anything. It just it didn't really do for me what the last few episodes have done. I'm a bit worried, honestly, just the trend here. ECW showed that there's a heavy limit to the number of people who are willing to watch these hardcore matches. And it's not my thing, but I get that it's a lot of people's things, and I'm not going to begrudge anyone what they enjoy. But we had the strap match a couple of weeks ago. We had this match this week, and now next week we've got what's going to be even more violent than what we saw this week. And that's 3 weeks in a row of matches that just would never make it onto a WWE program. And I'm wondering, like, is it too much?
Nick Gage is going to be too much for a lot of people. I mean, I am curious, you know, because do you pre-record him or am I buying the gimmick too much? Like, is he going to violate live television standards? Like, you know, Rush in ROH, like, violated ROH's, like, guidelines. Like, I mean, I've heard that about him. It's just like, you know, he's told, you know, don't do this and don't do that. We don't do that here. And he just does his own thing. Like, is Nick Gage going to be like that? Or is there just going to be a level of awe and respect and, oh, my God, look at this. I'm on TNT and I'm in the ring with Jericho. You know, yes, sir, you tell me what I'm going to be. You know, like, I don't know. Am I buying the myth, the legend into Nick Gage too much? Or as Tony Schiavone said, you know, there's a certain former WWE champion who you can check in with as far as that stuff goes. So, I think your voice, Chris, in your waving a caution flag here is important. Like, I watched this and it's like, hey, it's an adrenaline rush. The crowd's super into it. It was a title change. I thought what they did mattered. They did more than they should have, you know, from a physical toll standpoint for my taste. But, you know, we didn't get thumbtacks. There weren't some of the cliches. And so all of that, you know. But, you know, when announcers are going, I don't know if that's Moxley's blood on Archer or Archer's blood on Moxley or whatever, it's like every 6 weeks is probably good enough for this to be part of your brand. It might just be happenstance with, you know, the MGF Jericho, Labor to Jericho thing that this fits in, and Nick Gage is sort of, you know, a hot get. So bring him in. But Tyler, yeah, I mean, it's a there's a potential that this goes too far next week.
Yeah. You know, I would say not a shameless plug for GCW, but, you know, he's going against Matt Cardona this Saturday, Nick Gage is. And I would say, you know, if you're not watching that show, you can easily follow what's going on Twitter. I would say the level of violence of that match is going to be, you know, more than we see on Wednesday on Dynamite, just because there's going to be, you know, there's not going to be any light tubes on Dynamite. I can almost guarantee that. If there is, I'd be absolutely shocked. But I would say Cardona has basically asked for certain things not to be part of it, the pizza cutter and things like that. So
yeah.
I would say the level of violence of that match is a good barometer of, like, okay, how much of a work or is this guy, how much of a shoot is this thing going? So, you know, I tend to lean that Gage is a professional. It doesn't appear to be the way if you look at the documentaries, things like that. But I think there are certain things, you know, behind the scenes. You know, I think if there's implements that are used, like, yeah, if he's got a kendo stick, tables, chairs, all stuff, he's going to go as hard as he possibly can on Jericho, and that's known. But I don't think he's going to pull out a pizza cutter and slice Jericho's neck open or anything crazy like that. So I do think
that's a low bar, but yes, I agree. I hope you're right, Tyler.
Yes. Yeah. So, oh yeah, pizza cutter's totally a thing with him. And but yeah. So I just think it'll be extremely violent, more violent than this, but I think Jericho and Gage kind of know the limit of it, and there's certain things that I think Gage will respect. But, yeah, to your overall point, yes, this is going to be more violent than this week. That's why I was surprised by Wade's opening comments here, because I don't think you'll be saying the same thing next week if I had to guess. And
yeah.
I do think for people that aren't me, which I'm very cognizant of, it's a big match, but something like that almost needs to be like a special thing you watch on, you buy on pay-per-view to experience, and that's on you. But yeah, we'll see where they go. But yeah, I do think for majority of the audience, if you want to grow it and grow and grow it, I don't think this type of match every week is a positive.
I think the there's going to be a temptation with the crowd response and Tony's own, you know, proclivities towards this kind of thing to overdo it. And I think it's important to go, this is good, but it's like ice cream. It's not breakfast, lunch, dinner, seven nights a week. Like, let's spread this out. And we'll see, you know, what – again, it 2 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row. I mean, especially this tonight and next week, I think it's time to take a month away, you know, or longer from weapons causing bleeding with the level of apparatus violence that we saw tonight and we'll surely see next week, unless there's some sort of swerve or, you know, they do something different than we saw tonight. And maybe that's something, you know, I don't think you bring Nick Gage in and don't deliver his brand of violence, but it's Jericho. And, you know, he might want to put his own spin on things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe get the Walls of Jericho on him, like, 10 seconds a match, just to hold it. Like, for 10 minutes, and Nick Gage taps out, and then he's the king of hardcore. I don't know. All right.
Still better than
Chris
Jackson Anderson. Riker. I don't know. Did AEW look at Jimmy Uso winning a title after the arrest and just go, oh, yeah, hold my beer that you shouldn't have been drinking? Like, I don't get you bring in a convicted bank robber instead. I don't know. Anyway, I want to agree with Nick, which apparently we do quite a lot, with his praise of bringing in Chavo for Andrade. I think Chavo is highly underrated in terms of what he can do. He's acceptable on the mic. He's got a character that people believe in. People know who he is, but he's not going to steal the show. He's not going to be somebody who takes the spotlight away from Andrade. He also speaks English perfectly, which is huge because Andrade obviously doesn't. So I think that's going to be an underrated decision, is bringing him in, and I really like the fit there, and it also does get him away from Vicky. The worry that I have, and it's a weird one that just came to my mind, but is it possible to listen to the fans too much? I've noticed that Tony Khan likes to listen to what's being said online and on excellent podcasts on PW Torch, and just he changes things really quickly, and they just so happen to match suggestions that have been made on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And I'm just thinking, like, there's a possibility. We know WWE doesn't do it at all, but it's starting to seem like maybe AEW is doing it too much. They're lurching from one fan suggestion to another, and there's a reason that people like me don't own wrestling promotions. It's because we're not good enough at it. And if he keeps on just changing things, like, okay, the Vicky Guerrero thing worked, but if he keeps making all these changes because the fans online want it, he's missing the fact that the vocal minority aren't the ones that he needs to be selling to.
I think you have to go case by case. I mean, I think if somebody makes an argument, not against something, but against something with the reasons behind it, and you think to yourself, well, yeah, I went with that because of that, but that's a good point, and it matches up with the crowd reaction and my own judgment of how this is playing out, let me call an audible. I mean, I give him credit for that. If he's like, well, I like it, I believe in it, and I think all these people are wrong, but because they're saying it, I'm going to pull the plug on it, that's not good. I mean, he's got to go with his own judgment, but if he's willing to adjust and admit to himself, or not admit, but deny it, but still make changes, however he wants to rationalize it, if he adjusts on the fly, I mean, that is going to save him a lot of money, and it's going to serve fans well. I don't think you should react to, a thread on Twitter, you know, of you know, four people who just get under your skin, and now to spite them or to listen to them or whatever, you overreact. I think you can overcorrect based on a really small sample size. So to me, it should be, you know, an argument that's artfully stated, like every single one on this show, or because even in your mind, you kind of doubted it and you weren't sure if it was going to work, and some opinion sort of then tips the scale towards, okay, let's adjust. This was a risky move. I kind of feared it might not work, or I didn't see it coming. I thought there would be chemistry, and there wasn't. Like, so good. That's good. But yeah, I mean, I think I would give advice to any promoter and any person on earth, you know, spend less time, especially your public figure, spend less time worrying about a couple dozen people who are really loud and sometimes trolls and are insincere, telling you things just because it makes their day if they get a reaction out of you. Like, I would, you know, separate yourself from that and go for a walk or a jog instead, and you know, just do what you do and be confident in it and have some trusted people who are actual people you know with credentials to give you the feedback. I hope Tony, I think Tony's surrounded by smart people and listens to people he trusts when it comes to changes he makes. Tyler, your thought on all that?
Yeah, I kind of have a two-pronged approach. I think first that wrestling and professional wrestling on television is such a unique beast that it is something that is on TV week to week, and you can change it on the fly that you can't do with a scripted television show. You know, for example, Loki was a very popular show on Disney Plus, and you know that show was written and filmed months ago. And if you're the showrunner for that show, and you it's the recap for episode 3, and some reporter has a great point, you're like, oh my god, I wish I would have known that. I would switch it because I think that's a great point. And you know, it's just wrestling is unique where you could take good points for people that you trust. And I'm not saying that's what happens, but you know, if there's good ideas out there and they're free out in the ether, there's no reason not to implement them to make your product better. Is you know, I think it's just smart business. If it's someone that you trust, and you know, and you also think it's a good idea if you're the business owner or the promoter. And then two, you know, Tony's still, you know, newer at this, and he, you know, admittedly was a fan and was a hardcore fan and had a lot of subscriptions to sites out there. And you know, he hasn't hit the 10,000 hours or the 3 years or whatever number you need to be an expert in something. you know, I think in, you know, 5 years from now, I don't know if he'd be as inclined, just because he's a human being, to be open to as many suggestions and change on the fly. As humans get older, we get more aggressive towards change. So I think he's just in a perfect point of his life to take feedback, and he's just you know, in that zone right now. And I'd be surprised if he's as open to it down the road. So this is kind of my two-pronged approach to that situation.
Cynical and pessimistic, but perhaps a fair assessment of human nature. Yeah, Chris, anything else for us?
Just a couple of quick hitters. The unwanted female canine reference streak is up to 95 weeks, as JR did it during the entrance for the Britt Baker match. And I'm surprised you haven't mentioned this before. It is set foot in the ring, not stepped foot in the ring. And people need to stop saying stepped foot.
Okay. You know, I every year I vow to be less annoyed by things that people get wrong. You know, and now you've just added something to my list that wasn't on my radar. So, thanks. I will now
just one of the many
something
services.
New until I can. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm letting that settle into my brain here, or is it set in my brain? Oh no. thanks, Chris.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, guys. Have a good evening.
Yeah. Take care. All right, we'll go to Brian to Boston, and then probably wrap up there with Javier with some roundtable discussion. Brian, welcome back. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey guys, hope you're having a good night. I thought Dynamite overall was pretty good. I have to admit, after the show, I was a little bit distracted on the while I was waiting on hold because I kept hearing Hinton's smoke alarm going off, but. We said beeping in the background, but he's gotta get some new batteries if that's what I think it was. But anyway, the main, I have a couple of minor points, but I'll get to the big major point I wanted to get to first. The Britt Baker, because Britt Baker is probably my favorite wrestler in all of AEW. the Britt Baker Nyla Rose match was actually really good. I mean, I wouldn't quite give it 4 stars out of 5, but it, maybe like 3.5, 3.75. That was a really good match, and I was glad to see her get the win. It was good for what it was. But my concern a little bit, I mean, is what they're going to do next for her and afterwards, because I'm assuming they're going to have her in a fairly long title reign. I mean, the obvious play, I think, for All Out would be for her to face Thunder Rosa, you know, but I'm less certain about that because Thunder Rosa got her ass kicked badly by Deonna Purrazzo at Slammiversary, so that kind of lowers her stock a little bit in my mind. But, you know, I mean, after Nyla Rose and maybe Thunder Rosa, if they decide to go in that direction, I mean, who else is there for her to feud with? I mean, Jade Cargill? No. I mean, you could go the route of Ty Conti, but that's not really, I mean, and Serena Deeb doesn't really have much personality, to be honest, or at least she hasn't been given enough for it. I mean, you could do Red Velvet as a feud, but I don't think she's quite ready for that yet. So I'm just wondering who they're going to have her feud with after, yeah. You know, if they go the obvious route with Thunder Rosa. I mean, I have my own thoughts on the subject, but I've already talked about that. So I kind of wanted to shift gears a little bit on that. You know, they have these working partnerships with Impact and NWA. Maybe they should probably try to lean more on that. I mean, the Camille, I believe that's her name, the new NWA Women's Champion. I've heard good things about her, and I mean, you know, there's a lot of other female wrestlers at Impact you could use. Rosemary, Havoc. I mean, Deonna Purrazzo, that match has been teased. I just think AEW's got to look for something. I mean, they've been doing enough shopping around on the male wrestler bit with, you know, Daniel Bryan and potentially now CM Punk. They got to find women. I know there's not many of them, you know, because WWE snapped up all of them.
Brian, let me jump in. Yeah, I want to jump in and get Tyler's thoughts on it, because Jason Paul and I talked about that on the flagship yesterday. You know, I was a little more down on the depth chart of the established characters who can wrestle and be credible heel opponents, especially, as Jason pointed out, for Britt Baker, she goes babyface. Tyler, give your assessment of things. Bryant ran down a lot of names in AEW and elsewhere.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the assigned exclusive AEW women roster is, you know, pretty short. I mean, we've had the same, like, 6 women kind of in the same spot. If they're not a, you know, like someone from NWA, like Thunder Rosa, Serena Deeb, someone like that. So, you know, I think the easiest course of action is, you know, what you alluded to is signing talent. And, you know, there's, you know, I don't know when they're available, but, you know, Ruby Riott, whatever her name's going to be, or, you know, the Iconics, both of them, whatever their names are going to be as they're on the, another company, you know, something like that, some star power from the outside that WWE has released, and have that be a big time match for, Britt Baker. But, you know, I think the top, you know, 6 women that we've seen and discussed here, minus, you know, Sheeta, is just kind of stale and overdone because all those matches have been overbooked over the last couple of years because that's all they had. And getting, you know, fresh matches from other companies is great. You just kind of know the result when you have someone from Impact that's not a champion going against your champion. You know, that match is kind of established. So I think getting big signings as big as you can get within the women's division and putting some resources behind that. You know, the division has improved, but you can always make it better. And if there's someone out there you can sign that is going to give good quality matches like a Ruby Riott, I think that's the way to go to get a big match.
Bryant, another topic for us?
Ruby Riott would be a decent signing, but I'm not as high on her as you are. I mean, she... Maybe that's because the WWE thing just defined her down. But, I mean, she'd be a solid signing, but not someone I would want really headlining at pay-per-view. I mean, there's an obvious choice out there for, like, the top one that I don't think I need to say whose name that is. But, you know, there's a lot of baggage there, and you really have to get something in writing, you know, to say – if you screw up, I can fire your ass. you know, that sort of thing. So, I mean, I do tend to think that signing will happen at some point, but, you know, if I'm Tony Khan, you got to be extremely careful with how that was handled. But, yeah, I mean, Ruby Riott, I mean, there's just not a whole lot out there as far as women are concerned, you know, as far as free agents. And, I mean, Ruby Riott's probably the cream of the crop, even though she doesn't excite me at all. But as far as another topic is concerned, the main event was good, although personally I thought the women's title match should have been the main event. But it was nice to see Lance Archer get a win. He was about due for that. I was actually kind of hoping to see Ethan Page tonight, you know, maybe make an appearance after the Darby Allin match or something. But, you know, I don't think the show was – it was good, but I don't think it was quite as good as it was last week, with the exception of the Britt Baker match. So, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot that, the Andrade Death Triangle thing was pretty good, but, you know, my main concern is, you know, are they like booking too much too soon? And, you know, my main concern is, you know, you got to shore up that women's division. You got to do something if that means.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
But anyway,
yeah.
I'll leave off.
No, that's
that.
Good. Cool. Yep. And I think, you know, the idea, and we've heard it from a few callers of, you know, how does this compare to last week's show? I'm hesitant to do that as a rule all the time, because you can get yourself into trouble, Tyler, if your goal is, how do I make this week's show better than last week's? What I want to see is AEW just get in a groove, get in a lane, and have not this wild variance, but know who they are. And, I mean, here they're booking a couple weeks ahead. You know, I mean, we got, you know, Cody and Malakai Black. They're advertising that for a couple weeks out. They've got a full lineup for next week's show. There were no Young Bucks tonight. There was no Cody in person. There's no Malakai Black. They have depth to not overexpose their stars. So some shows are going to have more things that somebody likes than others, but they know who they are, and they do. You want that a small standard deviation, especially downward. Every once in a while, you have just a kick-ass amazing show due to a variety of, you know, angles and promos and matches that just click and all that. But what you want is a hot crowd and have, you know, around half of your top guys and around half of your mid-carders on, you know, each show in some form or fashion, but keep everyone else fresh by not overexposing them. So I stand back a little more and go, all right, is this a good show within the realm and standard deviation of what they're doing now? And are there major concerns or flaws or bad habits on this show, or are things moving in the right direction? And so my assessment is, like, yes, I mean, I'd have to sit down and scroll through both, you know, shows to kind of remind myself, and I could grade and go, well, this was a, you know, 87 out of 100 and last week was a 89 out of 100 or something, or, you know, whatever. But I don't think that should be, I think Tony Khan could get in trouble trying to just one up himself each week. And I don't think a good show with a hot crowd should be framed negatively if last week was a slightly hotter show with a slightly hotter crowd that also played more to what your preferences are in wrestling. So that's kind of my take on something Brian said, but also what a couple other callers had said about this week compared to last week.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think, you know, you want to have some metric that you're going by, either something that's subjective or objective. But, you know, if I were Tony, I would say, you know, do we have the best wrestling show on national television this week? That'd probably be a small goal, or the shorthand goal to be like, okay.
I have a guess, Tyler. I think Tony thinks his show is always the best show on cable television.
Yeah. so yeah, there you go. That's a good benchmark to hit every week for him. Then I would say. So, but yeah, beyond that, yeah, you don't want to. You know, if you do that, then you're going to have you'll have Daniel Bryan come in and attack QT Marshall just to have a hot show instead of saving that for the right moment that is going to be remembered long term. And yeah, so. You know, I think, like what you said, just is the show consistent? Is it relatively hot? Is it, you know, is it just going in the right direction? Like you said, I mean, it's such a subjective thing. Like I said, pro wrestling's so weird that, you know, you just kind of know or you don't know if a show is on the right trajectory or not the right trajectory. You know, before AEW, it was the debate of, hey, is Raw better or is SmackDown better? And, you know, it kind of goes that way for 6 months and then kind of flip all of a sudden. You're like, oh, this is actually the better show now. And that's kind of how I feel when I judge shows. Like, With AEW, you know, it's been a long run here where it's consistently been the better show, and they've been good week in and week out. A very rough, subjective view, but yeah, if you compare it week to week, it's a dubious thing because I can't tell you if this show was better than 6 weeks ago, but I can probably tell you if it was better than last week, and that probably proves that that's kind of a losing debate within your own head that doesn't really matter for the quality of the show.
Any guess on Tony Khan's announcement next week? Big announcement about a future event?
It's probably some sort of it's either their first stadium show sometime in next spring or summer that they've booked, or it's some sort of cool venue like Arthur Ashe, I would imagine.
I'm thinking it's going to be a UK-based pay-per-view. To me, I think that's – I mean, I know it's been talked about, but telling that to your national audience, that seems like that would bring Tony Khan, you know, into the ring or, you know, on camera for a rare Dynamite appearance.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah. All right, let's bring Javier on, a PW Torch VIP podcaster, to talk about what we haven't talked about yet. There you go, Javier. How's it going?
I couldn't even hear that. Hey, wait, hey, Paige, how's it going?
Good.
Well, let's try it again here. Let's see.
Okay, there
we go. There we are.
Yeah, it broke up. I heard like one note, then yeah. Death, and then one note. So it was like probably connection issues. The podcast isn't being brought to us by Peacock, is it?
No.
Because that would explain some of the technical difficulties we've had in the past.
Yeah.
I thought this was a good show. I enjoyed it. They did more on that Texas death match than I thought they were going to. Since this was for the IWGP championship, U.S. championship, I did not think that they were going to go, you know, do as much as they did. I do have to say, they did say this was held by New Japan rules. New Japan's a 20 count, not a 10 count. Moxley should still
Ooh.
Be champion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's our Texas death match. New Japan has a 20 count in a regular match, but if you're in Texas and it's a Texas death match, does that override the New Japan 20 count?
I mean, do death matches even have count on the outside? Now that I think about it.
Yeah, and does New Japan match have either a knockout or a submission? That was also a weird stipulation, I thought, for a New Japan style match.
Yeah,
I think if you're stuck to barbed wire, the match should be over. I don't care what country you're in.
So the mercy rule, the referee invoked the mercy rule then. But outside of a little niggling problems with those rules, I thought it was well done. I'm mildly concerned that Hikuleo is the next one up. Hikuleo is a very young wrestler. He hasn't really done anything to really. He had one really good match with Fred Rosser, but one atrocious match that I hated. But outside of that, you know, it is interesting to see him be the next challenger for Archer, or the first challenger for Archer.
What do you think the point of that is?
No clue. it'll be a good test for him for Hikuleo. It'll be a good test for him. It's just it's just like he hasn't really done anything, but maybe in front of a big crowd like this, we'll see what it is. And I think it's just basically get Hikuleo more experience. He's technically should be on excursion right now because he did graduate from Young Lion status. So it'd be a good, good test. It's also from someone who's watching Strong, it kind of feels weird that, oh, he's already getting, you know, a shot at, you know, an IWGP title already, but you know, it depends on how the match turns out next week, I think, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yep. Next week.
Yeah. Ooh. So I am interested to see what he does, but
is there any way it's like an olive branch to get Tama Tonga and Tongaloa to have a like a Young Bucks feud into this future point. It's some sort of olive branch to the family.
Well, because I was thinking about that, because with Jay White showing up on Impact, I actually recorded the New Japan Pride podcast today, but I hadn't finished editing, so I'm like, let me watch this to see, you know, so I can include whatever happens, and obviously a lot happened in respect to the New Japan title. Because with the whole Jay White thing, Jay White had been in New Japan talking about mainly on Impact, Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers have been like referencing Bullet Club, like they were Bullet Club, and then in New Japan, Jay White had been pushing back on it. I wouldn't be surprised. I thought it was going to happen in Impact, but I would not be surprised if we do get Tama Tonga and Tongaloa in some way, shape, or form at AEW at some point.
Cool. I think that'd be
yeah.
Solid match. Get the whole Bullet Club story going, and I think that'd be a good use of talent.
And the thing is, I feel like this has been early because I know there's going to be a New Japan AEW and probably with Impact Super Show at some point down the road. I was thinking like a year down the road or something, because I'm seeing a lot of like pieces being moved, you know, to strengthen that. You don't think that might be what he's announcing, like a Madison Square Garden show for next year, where with New Japan and AEW talent?
I think that is in the realm of reasonable speculation. I'll put it that way.
I mean, I think Wade would have a better authority on that. I just don't think AEW would need them to sell out Madison Square Garden at this point. They're not Ring of Honor. So I think if you're going to do that kind of show, I think you do that like next summer in, you know, at MetLife Stadium or, you know, Soldier Field or somewhere like that. I think you go all out and do a huge stadium show and prove that you can do it. And maybe you hedge your bets with talent from New Japan and elsewhere and have a super show. But yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
you know, I think
MSG, location is negotiable.
Yeah.
Location.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always. Yeah, I think if it's open to it, and that's like mm-hmm. a fantasy match factory, basically, it should always, if it's possible, it should always be looked upon as an option.
And the did they mention before I bring this up in case I missed it? Did they mention Kenny Omega's defense of the Impact World Title at all?
No.
Obliquely?
No. It's so weird. It's like NXT and WWE. That's just there's not a consistent, you know, rule that you can explain in terms of what does and doesn't get acknowledged.
Yeah, that upsets me more than – because I don't need them to constantly be talking about, oh, he's also Impact title champion, because I have heard some people, you know, talk about that everything – you know, them referring to everything he's doing in Impact. But he did defend the title against Sami Callihan, one of their top guys, in a, you know, brutal hardcore match similar to the one we ended up getting tonight with a two times in 1 week where I saw someone get stabbed in the face with a fork. And even pizza cutter in the Kenny Omega match, and you would think, you know, and you know, if you're following the Kenny Omega character and you're a Kenny Omega fan, you're following him from promotion to promotion. I mean, I don't need them to say like describe what happened in the match, but at least a line saying, you know, he's beat up because of, you know, he did defend the title last week, and it feeds into the narrative of he's busy and he's doing a lot of other things. He goes, oh, he just defended one of his titles this week. And you don't even need to call out Impact by name. But at the very least, do something to support the people who are following the Kenny Omega story and are following the Kenny Omega brand as opposed to necessarily the AEW and Impact brand. So, yeah, that kind of, you know, rubbed me a bit the wrong way.
I'm with you on that. I'd like to see... Like you said, there's a happy medium between whatever Tony's avoiding for whatever reason and just what they did tonight, you know, and you know, just an allusion to it is enough. So it seems like it's, you know, as we say, canon, you know, and I think it ought to be.
Yeah, and if I were a promoter, I would.
Go ahead, Tyler.
I would say, like, if I was a promoter, if I was Tony Khan, I would prefer to talk about another company before I let my top guy wrestle a 28-minute hardcore match. I think one of the, you know, those two options, I'd rather just say Impact once for 30 seconds as opposed to letting my guy potentially get injured. That is would cause major problems with an ongoing storyline if he got injured. So it's supremely odd to me.
Yeah, the other thing I have, the one thing about Tony Khan I've noticed is that he tends to strike while the iron is hot, because, like, all of a sudden, you know, you're hearing Nick Gage's, you know, name out there because of the documentaries and stuff. And, you know, I was thinking, I wouldn't be surprised if he, like, a couple weeks ago, I wouldn't be surprised if Tony Khan doesn't, like, at least do something with him, and then they dropped his name, and then all of a sudden he's on the show. And I'm like, you know, I'm surprised. And I don't know. I was thinking that with all the talk about, oh, man, this match is, you know, this match is going to be brutal, it's going to be, you know, whatever. I wouldn't be surprised if you have a straight-up, psychologically sound wrestling match, and then MJF come out all angry, and then Nick Cage says, oh, it's because I respect him, but I don't respect you, and then unleashes some of the, you know, hardcore stuff onto MJF, that sort of thing, so that people still get something of what they expect from Nick Cage, but it's on MJF and not Jericho.
And that, so, like, the Nick Gage character, he's all about getting paid, getting money. So that would work if he did like a mercenary role. I think that would be supremely funny. I would be all for that story.
I'd not rule that out. I'm chuckling at the concept of it, but I also think there's a chance that there is a curveball coming our way as far as that goes, as opposed to, you know, just the pain maker getting down and dirty like Sammy Callahan.
And staying on Jericho, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on the call, Wade, you mentioned that Jericho is having, like, one of the best runs of his career and the best reaction in his career. What I find amazing is that imagine what he could have been if he didn't have two companies working at cross purposes against him.
I mean, in a way that made him who he is. You know, I know it's sort of a cliche, you know, I am who I am because of all the hardships I've been through. But I don't know that he is as good as he is at this age doing what he does the way that he does it if his journey wasn't his journey. You know what I mean? So that doesn't mean – but, hey, would you trade him being a – you know, I don't know. Like, I think the legend of Jericho has meshed well with his ring IQ and his immense ego, his immense drive that's based on his – you know, his ego. And it famous people need to have an ego to bother with all the crap that comes with being famous. You know, money doesn't bring you happiness, but, you know, fame can satisfy an ego, and then money comes along with it. I think all that came, you know, all that has come together to make him who he is. And I think if his, you know, best friend was a promoter and he got booked, you know, over pushed and was a centerpiece act and didn't have things, headwinds working against him, I don't know that at age 50 he is who he is. And I don't know that he proved what he proved in Japan and took a chance, you know, with AEW, although he was paid well to take that chance. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think of that, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, not to get too philosophical, but, like, are any of us who we are without the exact path that we walked down? So, you know, I kind of lean more towards you of, like, yeah, if Jericho was, you know, born a Ganya, right, to bring it home to you, Wade. I don't know if he'd be the person that he is today versus, you know, I mean, not that he didn't have advantages. I mean, his dad was a professional athlete who's, you know, had good genetics to be a professional athlete and just had the drive because he, did not get all those breaks when he got into the business. So, yeah, I think if he had been given lots of opportunities easily, I don't think he'd be the person he is today. I think it's pretty easy to agree with.
Javier, anything else you want to add?
The keeping on what you've been saying, Wade, one thing that I've picked up, you've been saying a lot lately on various podcasts and stuff, is you've been bringing up that it's not about you, and you've been saying that phrase a lot. And I love it because it goes to show that lately we've been seeing a lot more different types of stories and a lot more different types of wrestling styles coming to the forefront. And so there's more for everybody who has like their own, you know, favorite style. So I think that, I mean, that's one of the things that's been exciting about wrestling. And like, if you don't like what WWE is feeding, you go to AEW. If you don't like something in AEW, then, you know, you have other options.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with different visions for what pro wrestling can be. And the goal is, it's not about doing just one vision and being angry that they're not doing that. It's about whatever choice you make, whatever your vision is or your style, just do it well and do it in a way that's respectful to the audience and respectful to your wrestlers and doesn't feel mean-spirited and doesn't feel spiteful. But enough about Monday Night Raw.
I was thinking about starting with a joke about, you know, losing Keith Lee, losing in his hometown, and booking another champion to lose to, you know, somebody else.
I don't think we had to explain that joke, Javier. I don't want to give you a hard time, but yeah.
No. I'm saying I was trying to come up with something earlier, but you know, it was like this is such a good show, you know. But you know, so the one thing that wasn't too, that kind of felt a little bit like clunky to me was the whole Andrade stuff. It seemed like he had more to say, but then, you know, because it seemed like he was going to say more in English, and then that's when he switched over to Spanish. For the most part, everything he said in Spanish was either rephrased or repeated by somebody else. And with the one exception that he did, Andrade did say that when I look at you two, referring to Penta and Ray, he did say, "I see two men that are drowning." One of the questions that was asked, that he asked, is, you know, why are you working for PAC? And since Triángulo de la Muerte formed, that's kind of been asking my question, what is it that drives that? Did they ever explain that? Because, you know, PAC is talking, oh, you know, they don't work for me, they're family, but I've never, ever felt that had been established.
I think that's a good point. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a cop-out, but when an act is together long enough and fight side by side, eventually that origin story is probably not vital. If it's just baked in that they're a group, or it's, you know, burned into the screen, you know, it's burned into Pac and Penta and Phoenix that there's an alliance there. And I think if you don't explain it early on, yeah, I mean, that's, I criticize it, but eventually if they're just together a lot for a long time and they fight side by side, it sort of just becomes, yeah, it just burns into the screen as that's a thing. Even if it would have been better to establish why earlier. Tyler?
Yeah. I agree. It's a little bit of a cop out, but it was not a big question that I had personally. So it doesn't, you know, I didn't have the same reaction. It kind of got the Vin Diesel and Fast and Furious treatment, you know. If PAC would have held up a Corona and said they're family, I would have been all about it. That's basically the only explanation we got. And then on your point with the Andrade, I got that same feeling too, that he was going to speak more in English, but the crowd kind of got loud, and I think he pivoted to Spanish to kind of regain control, so he didn't get not that they were going to do a what chant or something like that, but I felt like he thought he was going to lose control, so he switched to Spanish and he regained control. And, you know, I think this is a good litmus test for Andrade, you know, in front of a live crowd speaking, you know, on the mic, which he hasn't done for, you know, a long time. His NXT days, I guess, would be the last time he did that. And I thought he passed that with flying colors. And, I think he did a good job pivoting and maintaining control. So I thought that was a good sign.
Javier, we've got Brian, our outside correspondent, who just called in and is standing by. So anything you want to wrap up with, and then we'll jump over to him.
That's fine. I just had something, but when you said that, it went out of my head. So, just be on the lookout.
Does it come back?
Yeah. So,
Javier, should it come back to you if you say it in Spanish?
Probably not. I'll just have to go back through my notes. All right. So,
you can email. We'll look for the mailbag soon.
All right, so I'll be on the lookout for the New Japan Pro broadcast. Should be hopefully it'll be out tomorrow if I get out of work early enough to finish editing it.
I'm looking forward to it. No shortage of topics. Thanks, Javier.
Have a good day.
Yep, you too. All right, great. Let's go to Brian, our on-site correspondent, who experienced Dynamite tonight. It's been a fun week. Brian, thanks for taking time to talk to us. I know it's been a long and fun night for you.
Oh, it's been amazing, sir.
So talk about the crowd tonight. Was every seat filled?
No, every seat was not filled, but it was far more electric than Monday.
Yeah. Was there any – and we're only going to keep you for a couple minutes because I know you've got a lot going on. But was there anything that was there anything that jumped out as the biggest pop of the night, or was it just sort of a pick'em among like six or eight?
Definitely the finish for the whole night was absolutely amazing. Like, I could not be happier that I was a part of that.
The main event with Moxley and Archer?
Just the end, the whole end.
Yeah, yeah. Was there anything that didn't seem particularly over at some point? Was there ever a point where the crowd just sort of exhales and was like, well, okay, this is fine. We're not super into it, but we can catch our breath.
The Nyla Rose, actually, half the crowd left. Like villain is supposed to be DMD, and really, that wasn't. Half the crowd left.
Were they into Wheeler Yuta, like as a face or a heel, or cheering the action? And then it seemed like they really got into the Sting Orange Cassidy exchange.
They really did. There was a lot of cheer just on the general premise. As far as Orange Cassidy, there was a lot of electricity. That was actually a really good match. It was actually one of the best of the night as far as crowd reaction.
And we just talked about the Andrade segment, Brian, and the way the fans, not that they hijacked it, but that they might have affected the cadence of what Andrade was saying. How did that work? Like, because Chavo got cheered, Andrade was acting like a heel, and then you had obviously Pac and Penta and Phoenix as baby faces there. Talk about the ebb and the flow of the crowd response to that roller coaster of, hey, it's Chavo, and then all of a sudden it kind of turns into a back and forth with kind of a more heel face dynamic.
Well, you're in Texas, so the Andrade response was kind of mediocre. You got Chavo, and that was a ridiculous response. I think we all lost our minds. I didn't expect it. I don't know if anybody did. I think the big deal was that all three of the Death Triangle were there. That was kind of the really exciting part. The exchange was a little bit, but I think that the fact that it was in Texas and you had like the Spanish, there was a lot of Spanish speakers there, obviously, as a result of being in Texas. You got a big pop. More of us probably than were expected understood. So that it wasn't as much of a need. Now, probably on TV, it probably was. But as much of a need here live, it wasn't a big deal, like, as far as explaining it, because we kind of all got the whole idea. But it was really exciting, and I will actually say, I kind of wish there was a bit more interaction. It kind of fizzled, if that's the best way to phrase it. Because they kind of attacked the ring, and then there was just kind of a no climax. And that's the best kind of way that we were all hyped up. We were all we were all full of energy. We were all powered up. We were all ready to go. And then it was just kind of like, meh. And that was kind of the end of it. It kind of felt like a missed opportunity.
Tyler, do you want to jump in with a question?
Yeah. You said you were, present on Monday for Raw. Did I hear that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I guess it's kind of a general question, but, I guess the audience, did you feel the audiences were similar, or is this more of the 18 to 49 demographic, were there more families at the Raw show? And if they were, the demographic that was there tonight, I don't know, do you think they were as excited about the product on Monday as they were tonight, or is it just like night and day difference on the excitement?
What Tyler's asking is, are you the only person who went to both shows?
Well, okay. So my best answer to that question, there were families, I was actually around quite a few children and families, but I will tell you, I was at both shows, and there was a more impassioned feeling tonight, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
It kind of seemed like the best way to explain this is that we were all trained to do what we were supposed to do Monday. Tonight, we all got to experience what we were really reacting to.
Interesting, yeah.
I mean, it was just they gave us reasons to be excited. They gave us reasons to be pumped up. They gave us questions. They gave us enthusiasm. They gave us adrenaline. Monday was kind of like, okay, we know what's going on. There's John, there's Keith Lee, we know the points where we're supposed to get excited. Like, tonight was just different. We all kind of just reacted, and there was a lot of reasons to be, like, questions and pumped up, and, like, I was fired up, and by the time the main event hit, I was full of adrenaline. That's why I'm losing my voice right now.
What was it like from a live fan experience? Because one of the negatives that we hear about Raw and SmackDown, and this goes, you know, pre-pandemic, is, you know, the fans are there as props, but there's all this filler, you know, the ring entrance and then 4 minutes of just the music fading and a wrestler standing in the dark, or they do some sort of costume contest, or it's just there's no flow. This feels like with the split screen and the flow of the show that it almost you might forget you're at a TV show. But I don't want to put words in your mouth, or, you know, talk about the contrast Monday versus today in that respect.
That is 100% accurate. Like, we sat there and watched, I think it was Sheamus, and we watched Lashley in the ring Monday, solid 5 minutes, just dark. Like, they were just bouncing around, staring at the screen. It was that's really actually a very accurate kind of a description of what the difference of the experience is like. I had no idea when we were commercial and when we were not tonight. Like, there was just something going on all the time. Okay, I take that back. Justin Roberts was, like, joking with the crowd a little bit here and there when it was a obvious commercial break or they were prepping. But I mean, there's an energy, and that's the best way I can explain it. Like, you know you're on TV. You know there's a TV show on Monday. And I think they did a good job Monday, but I think they did a phenomenal job tonight. And that's the best way I can probably divide the two. Like, I was full of energy. I've been doing this, like, I'm 43. I've been doing this since I was 17, going to shows. And tonight I'm losing my voice talking to you because I was that enthusiastic. It was fun. It was a normal wrestling show. There was a lot to get excited about. They did a great job of pumping you up, leaving it hanging when they needed to. It's weird because I love both products, but I don't know, man. Like, if I had to pick one over the course of the last 3 A's, there's definitely one that I would put on top.
Tyler, anything else you want to ask?
Nothing that isn't super leading on my end, so I think I'll
bring it, man. What you got?
My question.
No, now I'm curious.
Yeah, I was just like, I guess it's more of a continuation of my previous question, and, you know, I think we've all been to WWE shows, and, you know, not everyone's been to AEW show yet, but I guess it's more of my continuation of, like, the families and things like that I can assume the answer here, but, you know, did it feel like the crowd in general, not the people you're with, but the people you're around, the chants and things like that, they were more engaged than maybe a WWE crowd? And that's a leading question, I know. But, you know, when we've been there, it seems like a lot of people who get tickets because they know it's WWE and they don't really know the product. And I guess, like, in your opinion, was that a huge difference in the knowledge of the product on when you were there Monday and when you were there tonight with the live crowd?
Well, I think, excuse my interruption, I think the knowledge of the product, I think that kind of speaks for itself. As far as families, there were families around me both times. I was there with a friend, the same friend, both times. I had a phenomenal time both times. And me and my buddy were joking up. And, you know, I guess after you've done this for a while, you can kind of predict certain endings. But I can tell you that we knew where the finish was on Monday, and we did not. There were a lot of false finishes. You surprised us as fans tonight, and that's, I think, maybe the difference. As far as fans and the family aspect, man, there was a girl behind me standing on chairs, standing on her daddy's shoulders earlier tonight, and that was not happening on Monday. And the rules were a little bit strangely more strict tonight. Like, you couldn't even walk in with anything they didn't want you to have tonight, but they did a good job of making a good atmosphere. They did not tolerate any kind of excess, but it was a good family atmosphere in both. Ironically, probably a little more strict than the WWE, but I think the best answer to the question is, I think everybody that was in attendance was as enthusiastic as you could ask them to be.
Did Tony Khan appear on camera at all tonight, Brian?
Not on camera,
in front of the fans.
He did come out.
Yep, I misstated that. Yep. So, Todd, what do you have to say?
He was really trying to pump the show. He actually, pre-show, he told QT Marshall to go back in the back because QT was doing the insult the crowd thing. And he's super awkward. That guy looks like a skater punk, and he's super awkward. But he came out, and he really got everybody pumped up for the show. It was about maybe a minute and a half before the actual Dynamite went on air. He got everybody excited. It was the entire crowd was chanting Tony. So we all kind of gave him some props just for giving us a product. But it was exciting. I think it was a little unexpected, but he did come out. He was on the mic for probably 3 minutes and talking about all the things they have coming up, kind of hinted at some reveals that maybe we don't know about, which I may or may not have an idea what that is. But it was really cool. It was I actually never saw him live, and it was cool to see him show his face. And in my opinion, it was kind of cooler to see him do it before the camera went on than Vince doing it after the camera went on.
Yeah. Was there anything before or after Dynamite that you saw that's just, like, noteworthy enough to pass on to us here that stood out to you?
Well, being live, I don't know if this made air. But did, and you may be a better person to ask than me, did the presentation of the belt to Lance from John Mox, did that make air?
Tyler, do you remember?
I don't think it did.
I mean, the only reason I hesitated,
cool.
Yeah, talk about it, because I was, you know, scrambling to finish up my report and get set up for the podcast. So I was trying to think if I you know, noticed it or not. So, yeah, talk about it. Maybe it'll...
Well, he was outside the ring. Obviously, Archer did his celebration. And then Mox came in the ring and kind of got in the ref's face, the belt or the title, whatever you want to call it, was sitting in the corner, and he went and grabbed it and presented it to him. I actually have a photo of it on my phone. But it was one of those moments where it's like those of us that are like the hardcore fans that really were waiting for this moment, like to see this rematch. It was like it was a very subtle thing. He just handed it to him, kind of nodded and rolled out the ring. But it was a moment that those of us who really appreciate the moment kind of thought, you know what, that's how you do that.
Yeah,
it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a
fanfare
thing.
Moxie was still stuck to the barbed wire when they went off the air, I'm pretty sure. So we definitely didn't see that, now that you describe it.
Okay.
Yep.
So that was after air. That was a cool moment. Like, I guess it was for us or for our benefit, but he actually handed him the belt, kind of nodded, and then rolled out the ring, and you were like, man, that's the kind of stuff that we as fans just kind of wait. Like, you don't have to like each other, but respect, that's cool. And he rolled out, and it was really a really cool moment. It didn't have to be a big thing.
Nice.
It wasn't like we're the best friends in the world, but it was really cool. I actually kept a photo of that. But I don't take a lot of pictures of shows.
Yeah. Cool. Send it along. I'd like to see that. Anything else you want to add, Brian, from your experience tonight? Anything either on camera, fan chants, or something that was taped or happened off camera, or for Dark or whatever. I mean, just anything else you want to share that stands out that you think listeners would like to know about.
I think that stands out to me is the most that the passion of the fans, the difference tonight, is I think you got wrestling fans. I think Monday you got people who got tickets or people whose kids talked them into buying them tickets. I think tonight you got wrestling, and it showed, honestly. I mean, that's the best possible way I can explain that to you.
Very good. Brian, thanks so much for taking time this week on both Monday night and tonight talking about your in-person experience.
Man,
it's great when you
can, man.
Yeah, I mean, we can go to two shows like this back-to-back and talk about it and contrast it. It's really interesting. So appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. Let us know when you go to another show and call in anytime.
Will do, sir. Thank you.
You bet. All right, Tyler, we'll wrap up here just with a couple emails or a few emails that cover topics we didn't cover in great depth or some points of view on it. We talked about Chavo, JB from Detroit, said, I really like the adjustment AEW made tonight, having Chavo being Andrade's surprise and having him as a representative rather than Vicky. Just seems like a better fit to me. This is yet another example of AEW understanding when something isn't working and quickly pivoting from it. Take note, Vince McMahon. My only critique might be that Chavo struck a bit too much of a babyface tone in his promo as Andrade's representative. But I'm really intrigued where they go with this Andrade-Chavo Death Triangle feud to decide who is the true face of Latin American wrestling, and I think there are many interesting paths they could take, which is always a good thing. As a side note, I wonder how long WWE and AEW can sustain these weekly surprises, this week being Nick Gage and Chavo. As always, love the show, and go VIP. Nick Gage and Chavo Guerrero. I mean, I didn't expect to say those names in the same sentence this week in regard to national television.
Yeah, that is and to say they're, you know, even a year ago, if those guys would have been big surprises, I think I would have been like, I don't know if that's a big surprise, either of those guys. So how things have changed. It's pretty amazing.
Interesting. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Any part? We talked a little bit about that, but I think the point I wanted to talk about on that, if you didn't have anything, was the constant surprises on both shows. And yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what we talked about earlier with the, grading each show week by week. And you're going to, if you do a big surprise every week, it's going to lose its, you're going to have diminishing returns. And at some point you're going to, you'll be chasing that, and it's not going to be good at the point. Yeah. So they just need to be careful with that. And both shows do, and you got to build a product like AEW is doing right now, as we've discussed all night, built on stars that you see every week and that you like, and not be relying on, big stars to come in and save the day. So, that's my only point on that.
All right, James Clemson, interesting email here. He goes, I am proud to say I'll be at Fight for the Fallen next week. Watching this show tonight and hearing your on-site correspondent has me so hyped for it. I'd like to contrast my excitement by telling you about my week. My wife was out of town for the past week, so on Friday I did something I haven't done in years and gave SmackDown a try. Edge was cool, but I was checked out, and I cut it off by the women's match. On Monday, I was pumped up to see John Cena's reaction at Money in the Bank as someone who grew up a huge fan of John Cena. So on Monday, I did something I haven't done in years and gave Raw a try. Cena made me cringe, and I was out before the Riddle match was over. My point is that there's – I don't know if people remember the Gong Show, but he's ringing the gong early on Ron's back down here. My point is that there's no way I'll be giving WWE a try again anytime soon. On the other hand, I'll be driving 2 hours on a Wednesday next week, and I can't wait. AEW is doing everything right, and I agree with Todd Martin's thoughts the past few weeks. I really think AEW is going to win this thing. And by the way, I said what Todd said the night before in the post show in so many words. Todd's a leader of many things, but he copied me on that one, unbeknownst to him. It was actually just great minds thinking alike. But a couple weeks ago on the post show, I just said I think AEW should be aiming for and I think is on a path to surpass Raw in the ratings. The next day on The Fix, Todd said the same thing. I think this – I watched this product. Anyways, thank you for your time, and let me know if you need me next week. I'll be in touch, James. So I do watch this product, and I see their numbers last week, which went up, and the network partnership that they have, the decisions they're making in terms of the talent they bring in, wild cards like Nick Gage, the sort of sense of just having tentacles everywhere, New Japan, Impact, NWA, they feel like they're actually part of the pro wrestling community, and that's going to create more fierce loyalty with the first million than grow to your second million. But I think they're doing enough. Like, the second million is about the Young Bucks wardrobe, like, getting so good and so high-end. And Kenny looking like he didn't wake up from a nap, but he's got his hair done, and he has sunglasses that don't look like he bought them on a whim at Walgreens while checking out. And, you know, they're doing the other stuff to add some polish, some pizzazz, some prestige to the presentation of the product. Well, that was 5 P's. Paul Heyman would be proud. So I do think, I mean, after what we saw this week, and I mean, I Raw was fun for me for my job. Like, it wasn't a boring show. There was a lot that happened, but I don't think it was a product where you go, wow, Vince McMahon was saving it up, but boy, has he changed course and corrected course. So, AEW just feels like a show that is on the rise, kind of like Raw did when it was about to overtake Nitro. So anyway, yeah, Tyler, your thoughts.
Yeah, and if I can get a shameless plug for myself, I think that same week, what was it, 3 weeks ago or so, that Todd said that on The Fix and had his whole argument.
Yep.
I think on that, if you look at my report for that Dynamite, I think in my final thoughts for the show, I don't think I said it explicitly, but I think I was pretty close to saying that I don't know how AEW doesn't beat WWE if they keep this up. So I think all great minds think alike on this
subject.
So
what you're saying is you're saying Todd's a plagiarist and he didn't give you credit and he – read your report and
yeah.
Went with the next thing.
I mean,
is that what you're saying explicitly?
He had just started following me on Twitter, so I don't know if that's a correlation or not. That he
awesome.
just kidding, Todd. But yeah, I'm with you 100%. And you know, I think how fast things turn, that I think a lot of people are coming to that realization. Obviously, you know, you're an influencer in the space, and so are people on the torch for certain demographics. And you know, I think all the fact that a lot of us are coming to the same conclusion right now is definitely says something, and the crowds are no small part of that. But, you know, just like the other discussion tonight, it's, you know, if AEW keeps on this trajectory and WWE keeps on their trajectory, I mean, just look at WWE after SummerSlam. Like, they're building two matches that, you know, Lashley's going to beat Goldberg and Roman's going to beat John Cena because he's going to go film a movie. And then, like, what do you have built up until you get, you know, to the Royal Rumble? Like, you just got a whole bunch of nothing planned, and it's just not a hot product. And, you know, that's a small issue in comparison to things. But, and then when you look at someone, you know, if there's a wrestling fan who's, I don't know, 17 to 30 right now, I'd be just absolutely floored if more than 10% of them prefer WWE to AEW if they're watching both consistently. And that's, you know, that's the long game, and Tony Khan and company have to keep this consistency up. And, you know, I think they have a lot more advantages than WCW did. I mean, you talk about this a lot throughout all time, but, you know, he's not working for, you know, a network like, you know, WCW was set up, and he is independently wealthy, or his father is at least, and he can keep going for this as long as he has a passion for it. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. So I think it's a much different situation than Vince had dealt with Ted Turner and Bischoff back in the day. So, yeah, I just don't see how, if things stay the way they are exactly, I just don't see any way AEW doesn't win this thing. And, you know, winning is a different example. They you could have two shows that are, you know, huge, you know, media platforms, especially with the way the media rights are going with sports, that WWE's going to die or anything. But, yeah, it's the first time I felt like this in my lifetime. So yeah. That is it's quite something.
Well, when WCW went under and people said they'll never be another competitor, you know, it was the end, you know, that just wouldn't happen. And I don't know what show and what date over the years, but many, many times I said someday there's going to be a really smart, passionate person who knows wrestling with money. And there's going to be a network executive who remembers the Monday Night War era and all the money that was made and all the fun they had. And this can happen, you know? And I mean, it wasn't inevitable. It wasn't, you know, just destiny, but it's not shocking that somebody who loves wrestling, who also has money or knows someone who has money, you know, whatever it is, would would coincide with the network being hungry for, you know, live programming with a proven track record. And it took 20 years, but it happened, you know. And, you know, TNA struggled to fill that space. And I, you know, talked to Jerry Jarrett on a regular basis in the lead up to the NWA TNA being launched, and his heartbreak on the weekly pay-per-view format numbers when Jay Hossman was telling him things were doing really well and they weren't, and he spent money that he didn't have as a result. It was like a – he wrote about this in the book. I mean, it's just – it was a hand-to-mouth, you know, struggle. It's let's go paint the barn in Nashville. Like, it was a completely different level of startup than what Tony Khan's working with. So, you know – But you have to have the right idea. And so I want to read this email because this fits to what we're saying. Jimmy in Stockton, California says, it seems like AEW as an organization is quick to adjust. Christian working with Jungle Boy instead of immediately being inserted into the title picture, and Chavo Guerrero replacing Vicky, two recent examples. But tons of individual wrestlers are improving their physiques. Powerhouse Hobbs, Evil Uno, pretty much the entire inner circle except Jericho. Their gear and their presence, and I think it really helps AEW feel more major league. I know it's not super compelling podcasting, but I sent along a picture of Hobbs tonight versus when he started on Dark. Have you noticed this as well? And Wade, if there is time, what were you thinking with the promos from Death Triangle and Andrade? Could you follow along? Do you think that they showed fire and charisma? Thanks for all you guys do, and everyone, go VIP. Wrestling is awesome now, and PW Torch does a dope job of breaking it down. Thanks, Jimmy. I might use that as a pull-out quote. VIP, they do a dope job. Love it. Yeah, we talked quite a bit about Death Triangle and Andrade. I didn't need to know what they're saying. I'm not saying it was a perfect segment, but the perfect segment is like NXT. Here's a question, and here's the scripted answer, and then there's an awkward pause, and the next question. And I like NXT, but it is a WWE. You know, there's a level of WWE production. I like a little chaos. You know, a little what's going to happen next, and who's supposed to talk, and who's going to step up, and there was a little bit of all that, and it felt like there was legit pride on the line and logical things being said in response, and it felt impromptu. It felt extemporaneous at times, and so that made it better. And yeah, the adjustments, you know, Christian and Vicky are, Vicky and Chavo and Christian are a couple good examples there too. And yeah, and then I talk about ring gear, you know, and physiques too. You know, Kenny looks like he's in better shape now, Tyler, than 6 months ago. Just physically, he looks like he's you know, cutting back on carbs or whatever. You know, I don't know. It's a cliche. But whatever he was eating too much of and not training enough during the pandemic, it's like he looks like he's an elite athlete again instead of a guy living off his laurels. So a lot of things are coming together, and it all adds up and it all matters.
Yep, I agree on all fronts.
Yep, very good. All right, Greg... no city here, says, I don't think it's a very good sign that a secondary title from another promotion headlined over Britt Baker's first title defense. I get that it was a chaotic Texas death match, but why not have these matches on different weeks so that Britt can get the headline spot? And AEW really needs to get more of its women's division on Dynamite. Sheeta has yet to appear on Dynamite since losing the title. Tay Conti was last featured on April 21st, Red Velvet on June 4th. No good reason I can think of as to why all this talent continues to be relegated to YouTube shows. Tony Khan really needs to figure out how to balance women's appearances and matches on Dynamite as opposed to men, so more female talent is featured. I think if he had a better roster, he would be more comfortable of women. I think he'd feel it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's part of it's his fault for who he hired, and then the character development of the women. It doesn't seem to be an area that he's as excited about. It doesn't seem to be as plug and play as some of the male talent that he's acquired. So I think it's a lot of factors, but this is not equal time for each gender, you know, and Britt Baker and Nyla Rose is not Jon Moxley. It's, you know, like a Texas death match versus a regular match. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons that match headlined. And I try to be sort of gender blind in the micro sense on a show and say what match belonged on last. And regardless of gender, yes, it's a New Japan secondary title compared to your women's title. I get that argument, but Moxley's a bigger star than anyone else we're talking about. And Nyla Rose and Britt Baker could have headlined to Dynamite. But I don't know that anything can follow what they had planned with Mox and Archer. So, I'm open to conversation on this, but I think until the women's division and the development of the characters improves, it's not a charity. It's not a social cause. It's about ratings and profit and getting a big TV deal. And, you know, so I think you can be critical of the groundwork Tony does to make the women important. But if he doesn't have the depth and importance to a women's match, you don't just out of charity or social, you know, some social cause, put them on after a match that has more marketability. So that's my take. Yours, Tyler.
Yeah, I'm pretty aligned with you. I think if you look back, you know, at least these last, you know, this week and last week, I definitely don't think that the Baker Rose match was better than, you know, the Darby Ethan Page match or the, you know, the main event that we saw tonight. And you could probably go back many weeks, and you know, I was probably a little lower on that match than most of our callers. I thought the last, you know, 5 minutes were pretty good, but I thought the crowd almost turned on it there in the middle when it was kind of a slower paced match. So you know, I think putting it in the main event spot, you know, I just don't think the history that those two have had together, you know, bell to bell, is very compelling for a main event, and I think Tony Khan understands that. And that if it's the right opportunity, I think he has no problem headlining with women. But yeah, I mean, I think the real thing you can point Tony Khan is now he needs to point, you know, use his wallet and get some talent within AEW to bolster the women's division. I think that's the critique you can use against him right now because, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think you need to put women in spots that are going to make them look bad and forever tarnish their brand when they can get better on less viewed, more hardcore fans that are going to be more forgiving than if you put them on, you know, three matches on every week and then you just lower your whole division because they're not worthy of TV and then people tune off because it turns into a, you know, Monday Night Raw-like thing where, you know, okay, well, there's three women matches and maybe they're not the best in-ring work at this point because the talent's not there or not developed enough. And, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, if it was there and if there were compelling matches, bell to bell, I think they would get as much time. Tony seems like a guy who puts the best matches he thinks he can put on no matter what. And I just think the division needs bolstered from a talent standpoint and just a number standpoint too. I mean, if you just look at the men versus the women who are signed, you know, this is bound to be the case. And I think that's the critique you can make. And hopefully with Rampage, maybe there's more of a commitment to have more women's matches on, you know, you'd have at least two every week and see where we go. But I think hiring more women, training more women is the critique, not the amount of time on TV at the moment for me personally.
Zach in Texas, we're on out here. My brain is still trying to process everything I saw. Nick Gage, Chavito, and the tease of Andrade having to find partners to fight Death Triangle. Mox and Archer actively trying to murder each other in the main event, and then Haku's huge son stepping up to Archer. It's just such a different world from Monday night. Darby and Orange Cassidy were selling their butts off. Britt going for the Eddie spot in the title match, and Vicky saying the hell you are was fantastic. By the way, I love that Nyla Rose got it wrong. You don't beg off when you throw the belt to the person you act knocked out. I love that she blew the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole show was great. I'm just sad I couldn't make it to see it happen in person. Zach in Texas, what's your excuse, Zach? So I don't know if you have anything to say on that, but there was a lot to digest on the show.
Yeah, I would say to defend Zach, Texas is a big state. We don't know where in Texas he's from, so for the travel, why he couldn't make it, I'll defend Zach there for you. I think we talked about everything on there. I think the only thing that did not get brought up at all was the Kazarian Gallows match, which I think had no reason to be brought up by anybody. So I just want to make sure we talk about that just for a second before we end here. But, you know, I thought that was also kind of a pivot for Tony Khan AEW. I don't think that character has been working very well. It's been kind of random. And to see him just kind of get beat up and, you know, he wasn't part of that Dark Order skirmish at the end there. I don't know if that signaled anything to you that they're pivoting away from that character for Kazarian, but, you know, I don't think it worked for me personally, but another example of a pivot, a smaller, you know, lower card guy switching. But, yeah, I mean, I think what Zach is saying is just kind of a chorus throughout the evening of this is why the show is so much more different than what WWE is producing. And I think that's kind of the highlight of this week of, you know, Dynamite versus Raw and what have you. It just, you can feel the difference, and it helps to do a show like this because I feel like I'm not a crazy person for having those opinions. Cause it seems like a lot of people, at least in our ecosystem here, feel the same way. So that is reassuring.
And, you know, another pivot is Kazarian not getting mic time right now. You know, I thought he was just, like, it was just over the top. It was, you know, self-important and too intense and it just didn't, the tone was wrong. I don't think the instincts were there. The delivery was heavy-handed. And it just wasn't, it didn't fit. Like, I like him being more the not the sharpshooter, but what is it? He's just kind of running in and hitting people and then running away. Like whatever term I'm thinking of, I can't think of, but it's just, yeah, just kind of sniping people on the sidelines, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But again, there was a backstory there, but the right thing happened in the match. You know, I don't think Kaz is good to have on your roster, but mm-hmm. you don't build him up to more than, you know, what he's doing now or what he's been doing. You know, I think in TNA with a more limited roster, he got more of a push, but he was never a top guy even there for a reason. So he's a good utility veteran, and the crowd, you know, reacted to him. It was a hot crowd. But I think Tony, you know, shows he's got pretty good instinct for how far to push someone, even if they aspire for more. Sometimes, you know, they just the charisma, the promo skill, you know, whatever. There's a certain spot that you fit, and you know, they're trying to cast do something different than, you know, SCU, and that's fine. But you don't look at Tony making decisions going, my God, he's not correcting course and this isn't working very often. You know, you see more course correcting, and that's mm-hmm. a really good thing. Go ahead, yeah.
No, I was just saying, yeah, I mean, just to finish that off, is, you know, that is not a important story on the show, but that's even getting the same sort of delicate touch of you know, pivoting when things aren't working. From top to bottom on the card, and I think it just shows a holistic approach to the booking all around, which is, you know, a positive sign for sure. So go ahead with what you're going to say.
Yeah, so Javier remembered what he was going to say, so we'll close with that. He said, mm-hmm. I was going to ask where you think things are going with Andrade and Death Triangle. If Death Triangle stays together, is Andrade going to get two guys, maybe form a new Ingobernable's faction? If Andrade's entreaty ends up working with Penta and Phoenix and takes over Death Triangle instead, does Pac find two guys, or do Penta and Phoenix split up? It's like eight questions in two sentences, Tyler. What scenario do you think they're headed towards?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ideal scenario is for, you know, whatever Los Ingobernables guys that are available, and there's lots all across the world and in New Japan and Ring of Honor even, with that might have some expiring contracts at the end of the year here. I think Andrade getting some of his Tranquilo friends, if you will, makes more sense than him stealing away Rey and Penta from Pac. So, you know, I see Death Triangle sticking together here. I don't see anyone turning on them. And, you know, I would – anyone that joins Andrade at this point I think would be an addition, not someone that's already on the roster. You know, I could be wrong about that, but I can't think of anyone on the roster right now that's in a, you know, a prominent role that I think fits with him to be – you know, a henchman for him, essentially. So I think something outside would fit for him. But beyond that, I see, I don't know. I mean, I like that with this, that I thought that he was not calling them out last week. I thought it was more of like, hey, I would like talk to you and join forces maybe, but it was definitely a call out. So I don't know. I don't have a super good read on that, but I like that. I can't exactly pinpoint what's going to happen week in and week out. I think that's a strength of, a mid-card feud like this.
Tyler, tell people I can follow you on social media and a little bit about your podcast that they can listen to now for free.
Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Ring of Tyler. And every Thursday on the Daily Cast feed, you can listen to myself and my co-host Ryan Sullivan on the Podcast of Honor, where we, you guessed it, talk about Ring of Honor. And, you know, break down the weekly television, and if there's big shows coming up, so now they're more on a more regular basis. They're doing a pay-per-view almost every month now, the end of the year, so we will get you primed and ready for that. I think there's a caller tonight who talked about how we keep them informed with Ring of Honor, so that is our goal here, is that there's a lot of wrestling going on, so if you need to be informed of Ring of Honor, you give us a listen every Thursday, and we will do that. And about every other week, we have a guest, and we just for tomorrow's episode, we talked to Dak Draper. He is an up-and-comer within the business. I think he will be a major player in, you know, 3 to 5 years at another company. What were you going to say? Sorry.
Oh, he's great on Mad Men. Just a really bad joke.
Yes. and he's got a dog named Dog Draper, so that's even more of a Don Draper reference there. But, yeah, he's on the show, so he's a great listener. If you want to kind of buy stock early on wrestlers, I think we're a good resource for that. And, yeah, so we talk Ring of Honor and a little bit of other stuff. But, yeah, give us a listen there. And then you can always read my alternative report for AEW Dynamite, opposite of yours, Wade,
yes.
Every Wednesday. And then for Rampage, we'll get better information than I did tonight. But somehow you'll be able to listen to the Rampage post show that I am a part of in coming weeks. So more information to come. But yeah, you can follow me in all those places.
Excellent. You can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. You can follow our brand at PW Torch. And of course, check out, as Tyler mentioned, pwtorch.com. Live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, lots of TV show reviews and hits and misses columns, breaking news, and more. Awesome. Well, we got roughly 2.5 hours out of a two-hour wrestling show. That's always good news. That means we got good caller support, a lot of topics to delve into, and our on-site correspondents. If you are attending a future Raw, SmackDown, or Dynamite, email me. We're filling in the spots on a regular basis. I think we've got Cleveland for Friday. Someone finally got back to us, so I think we're going to line that up, but it's always good to have more than one. And then Kansas City, I think, is still a gap. Otherwise, we're filling up the weeks that follow. I think Pittsburgh, too. I don't think we've gotten anyone on Pittsburgh or Tulsa. So anyway, if you're going to any future shows, let me know. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. We can bring you on when it's convenient for you to spend 5 minutes or 15 minutes with us talking about what it was like in the building, what happened off air, crowd response, all that good stuff. Again, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Check out the flagship for an in-depth conversation with Jason about Raw, Money in the Bank, SmackDown, NXT, some ROH talk to Impact, or maybe not much ROH talk. I think it was Impact that we closed with. That was a Tuesday flagship on the Blue Logo Show, so you can go right to that now if you haven't listened yet. Just search Wade Keller if you haven't and subscribe to the Blue Logo Show in addition to this, the Red Logo Show. Thanks again, Tyler. We'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thank you.